United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Oh, Technologies is the place to go. Ambassador Technologies, Youngstown's best for computer repair, networking, website development, and even low-cost business cards and publishing. Call Ambassador Technologies at 330-759-9700. Online at ambastech.com. That's ambassTech.com.
Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. It is 8 minutes after the hour, 12 o'clock, and we are here. Styx and I, we got a special guest in studio. We're going to talk about with him in just a second. Hey, Styx, why are you? Now, did you finish your porch?
Almost.
No.
Heavy work.
No. Did you finish your porch where now you can come to work on Mondays?
Yes. I can come to work on Mondays again.
Okay, because I got to check.
I still got railings and steps to build, but.
But
the structure, the main structure's up. The guy's coming tomorrow to put the shingles on the roof.
But you can come to work on Mondays now.
I sent you a text a week ago, Thursday.
Well, I knew. I knew that you weren't coming.
I heard through the grapevine that you were bad-mouthing me for not showing up.
Well, we were. That was not the point. It's not the point about what you're doing. The point is you weren't here. Who cares why? We knew you called off. That wasn't the point. We talked about your Porsche.
Oh, okay.
And Ben and I got the difference between porch and porch. And Porsche.
Porsche.
And I said you were working on your Porsche.
There's a difference between a porch and a deck.
But you're working on a porch.
Right.
But we called it a Porsche, like a car.
Oh.
You got to understand the conversation.
Okay.
It was a Porsche and a porch.
Okay. No, I don't have a Porsche.
So you're working on your Porsche. That was the conversation.
Okay.
And, yes, I was bad-mouthing you about not being here. It wasn't that you didn't call off. We knew that you weren't calling off because you were doing your Porsche.
Okay.
That was called a Porsche.
Okay.
And we were killing time, and it worked.
Yeah.
And people were listening.
Good.
Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. If you want to call us locally, you can. You can do that at 330-781-9600. Want to thank some of our newly oncoming sponsors of the show, Pet Spa Salon. If you need to get your dog groomed. Now, listen, I know some of y'all dip the dog in the tub, but sometimes you need to go to a groomer and get their nails cut. You know, you need to go and check. You know, you need to do that. You need to give them a flea dip.
Do they make them smell like strawberries?
No, dogs don't smell like strawberries. Dogs don't. No.
Chloe the Beagle does. When my daughter takes her to her.
Why would you make your dog smell like a food so the dog can want to eat? You know, no.
Dogs don't eat strawberries.
My dog eats everything.
You got a strange dog then.
Oh, my dog is nuts. they do both dogs and cats. And, you know, if you love your pet, if you got a pet, you know, dip your pet, get your dog dipped, get your dog done. They do nail trimming, they do brush, they do bathe, they do cat trims, they do dog trimming. Because some of you, if you have dogs with a lot of fur, a lot of hair, you might want to get them trimmed for the summer. They do it all. Give them a call at 330-758-4444 and ask for Joy. Tell them that Tracy and Friends sent you, and I promise you they'll treat you right. In studio with me, I have Reverend John T. Coates. and he is the executive director for the Ohio Right to Life, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Listen to that voice. You can tell he has a background in what's it called? Radio?
Radio. Radio. Radio, yes. We love radio.
Yes, we do. That's where we met.
The theater of the mind.
John and I met back in, I guess it's been about 14 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah, about 14 years doing radio. You were down in Columbus doing radio?
Columbus, Ohio.
And I was here doing radio. And tell us a little bit, because I don't have a whole lot of time before Jerome Corsi comes on. You're going to hang out with us for the day.
Oh, yes.
So tell us a little bit about Right to Life. We've had some people on. We've had Reverend Childress come on, hang out with us.
Oh, yes, Clenard.
Clenard mm-hmm. is out of his mind.
Yeah.
also had the guy who wrote Green Lime or Green out of Texas.
Okay.
He set my whole show, he set it ablaze. It didn't go out for days.
He set it on fire. That's good.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Right to Life and why you're involved, why it's important to you, and what you think about this massive push for keep people out of my private parts.
We hear it across the street. Our offices are located right across the street from the State House, and we hear all types of foul things as they're coming from there. But Ohio Right to Life, of course, is the largest and the oldest serving Right to Life organization in the state of Ohio. And, of course, we work to protect life from the womb to the tomb. And we do that through advocacy of legislation that's pro-life oriented. And in fact, we're so happy that the governor signed into the budget 5 pieces of pro-life legislation and just recently.
What was in that budget? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, some of the things that was in that budget was that what was popularly known as defunding Planned Parenthood.
There was a huge little ta-ta-ta up here about there was a whole bunch of old women talking about Planned Parenthood. What did the governor do?
Well, what the General Assembly did, and the governor signed into budget, is that they prioritized funding. They reprioritized the funding. So the money that the state government was giving to Planned Parenthood to provide so-called sex education and other medical services, there's other agencies, in fact, over 180 different agencies throughout the state that perform the same services, but yet for year after year after year, Planned Parenthood was at the top of the list while these other agencies were all the way at the bottom of the list. So what the legislators did is that they prioritized the funding where Planned Parenthood would be put at the bottom and these other agencies would be put at the top. So basically it took approximately 7% of their funding away, and you and I both know that 7% does not classify as defunding anything. So they continue to exist, but they put up a big stink about losing that 7%.
The way that they sounded, you would have thought they took away like 70%, not 7%.
Oh, yeah.
70%.
And that's not their only funding stream from the state or from the federal government or any entity. They receive millions of dollars from government to perform what is so-called health services. Okay, or sex education services, but there's a term I was introduced to not long ago that's called fungible, and that's where money intended for one thing seeps into something else. So we know that those dollars are interrelated, and they help to indirectly support the abortion industry in this country.
Now let me ask you this: they tell me, because I don't understand how Planned Parenthood gets all of the funding, and when you have we have Obamacare now.
Almost half Obamacare, delayed half delayed Obamacare. Okay.
Why would you need to have a lot of Planned Parenthood funding if you've got access to physicians who can give you education on you can get, because they're talking about other health services. So if you have community health centers who are being funded, you have your own physician being funded, you have everyone in America has health care now.
Right.
Why do you need to have
good.
An outside source?
Thank you very much, and that's an excellent point. But part of what Planned Parenthood is talking about is that they lie to the public. And like, for instance, they say that they provide health screenings or cancer screenings where they don't – there's not a mammogram machine in a Planned Parenthood in Ohio, but yet they say we provide mammograms. What they do is provide mammogram referrals. Good Jesus, my church provides mammogram referrals to places. So We don't do them in church. We don't do mammogram examinations in my church. Okay.
You got a mammogram station in your church?
No, we don't do mammogram stations. Nor do we do any other type of breast examination in the church. Will you sister step behind the veil, please? No. I believe in the healing ministry, but not
really. Does Planned Parenthood do pap smears?
They do perform, but some places do perform pap smears. And one of the other arguments is they said that women could only come to us to receive certain services, but the reality is that they charge for the services that they do have. It's on a sliding scale. They have a sliding scale where many of these 180 different health agencies that are located throughout the state in urban areas and in rural areas, and they provide many free services to women. So these other 180 different agencies compared to less than 30 Planned Parenthood agencies are where the vast majority of Ohio women go for health care.
When we talk about right to life, mm-hmm. you know, the liberal argument is for those people. Well, you support killing. You support war, and you support
capital punishment.
But then you don't, and you don't want to feed the kids when they come out. But you're concerned about people, and a woman's reproductive system.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us that.
That's misinformation. We are concerned about the quality of life that one has when they come out, and that's why we took the leap in as Ohio Right to Life in supporting Governor Kasich's Medicaid expansion. Program, which we took a good kick in the behind from some of our conservative supporters over, because it would be hypocritical at best for us to advocate that women have these children, but yet there be no dollars available for them. And also, those dollars help to give poor white women, majority in Southeast Ohio, the availability to choose their physician. Because if they didn't have that availability to choose a physician, then Planned Parenthood would say, "Hey, here we are. We'll provide you services, and guess what? When you get pregnant, we can provide you additional services as well." So as an African-American male, I happen individually to be against the death penalty because of problems within the justice system historically within this country. The right to life community is not monolithic. Okay, there's a variety of different viewpoints on life, but what I know about right to lifers is that they adopt children, they're foster parents, and they promote for quality of life for children once they are developed and come out of the womb.
But isn't it? Because I'm a right-to-life person, but I'm also an anti-welfare person, because I believe that charity needs to be done individually. I look at welfare as a form of theft, and that you take the product of someone's labor away from them, and you give it to another person, and they don't have a say. So I believe we all need to be charitable.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe in forced charity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and many Americans believe the same thing, and that many Americans believe that you're robbing a future generation as well. Okay, but we have a flawed system that we have to constantly work on providing for those, making sure the system isn't getting ripped off. But also put a system in place that can help give people a helping hand as well, so that they can get on their feet and move forward.
Let me ask this, because I don't want to go too, because we get into this conversation, we will be here when Jerome gets here.
Yeah.
we don't do that. But my question is, do you think that we should just abandon all forms of public assistance instantly?
No.
So what do you think? I mean, because when I say welfare is not robbery. The problem is, we haven't put accountability factors into the welfare programs. And hear me what I'm saying. Because of the history of the Job and Family Services and or, quote, unquote, the welfare program, it has created a populace of undereducated, underperforming people that if you were to drop right now, it would be worse than freeing them from slavery.
in my opinion, here is the difference between government charity and private charity. And I say, no, we can't drop it all because you have what you've talked about, and it's not just an African-American thing. It's a certain segment of the population.
That's correct.
Multiple generations.
Because the vast majority of people on welfare are white people.
Right.
That's correct.
Absolutely. But the thing is, if Joe's a drunk,
right,
and Joe goes to the government and says, I need assistance, the government can't determine that Joe's a drunk and not give him any assistance. Whereas a private charity can say, okay, Joe, listen, we'll help you if you go to AA. If you do these things to get yourself out of this, we will help you. But if you're going to choose to stay where you're at, you can go live under a bridge.
Well, the courts kind of say that.
Not really.
You know, well, they use diversionary sentencing, and they'll sentence someone to a program, and if it doesn't work for them, they go to jail.
But when it comes to the number 347-945-5229, when it comes to the public assistance programming, it's a little bit different because you have people. I have a problem, and you know, with how we have patterned this paradigm for American future.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a child, mistakes happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you can't care for the child, and you may or may not be working.
Okay.
If you're not working, I don't understand why you're not volunteering at the school for your children.
Good point.
I don't.
But there is some of that.
No. There.
They require work.
No, I didn't ask you for work. I asked you to, because if you can't, because see, if you're not finding a job.
No. They send them to community agencies to work.
And what I'm saying is,
for example, they send them to the Concern in Sebring.
But what I'm saying is, they don't send all of them. So I don't know how they pick and choose some of them and not all of them.
Okay, I was under the impression they sent all of them.
No.
No uniform.
No, there's no uniform. No.
Okay.
No, you don't have to go. You don't have to go to the PTA. And you don't, because see, I don't understand your child not getting to school on time and you not working. I don't understand that you're not being able to help with your children and try to be a, you know, teacher's aid mom, because you're receiving funds for your family, and I don't have a problem with that. But if you're home like that, you're not looking for a job 6 hours a day, because if you are, you should be working by now. If you got that kind of hustle, and you're doing something. So my question is, how is it that we can have underperforming educational systems with lack of parent involvement, yet have 100% free and reduced lunch?
In the same way, in Columbus, where I'm from, we had the same problem in the school system. They were giving away free and reduced lunch without requiring the kids to fill out applications and then turn them in.
Oh, we no longer – in Youngstown, we just blanketed the whole school because it just was more paperwork and cost more to fill out the forms, process the forms, and do all of that.
Oh, so in other words, you get 100% federal reimbursement.
Absolutely. And it would cost more for you to actually have a person there to process the paperwork than it would for you just to give everybody free and reduced lunch.
Wow.
And so now everyone's on 100% free and reduced lunch. Well, if you have 7,000 children inside of your school district and all of them are receiving free and reduced lunch, which means you're telling me that at least 60% of your population is on some type of public assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that be the case, then we ought to have at least 45% of parental involvement
in the
because
program.
You're not working.
Right, in the food program.
No, not the food program, education
or
program, you know, booster club, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
playground
so,
monitors.
Anything, you know, walking kids across the street. But anything that's going to benefit the education system so that we can reduce the amount of persons who are going to receive public assistance in the future because they have an education.
Not only that, if you're in a school with your kid and you're illiterate, pretty soon you're going to get to be illiterate.
They'll learn as well. The parents
yeah.
will learn as well.
Right. Right. If you can't read and you start spending time in a classroom, pretty soon you're going to gain
true.
A lot by
That's not
osmosis.
True. That's not true. Because there are, if you look at your ancestors, a lot of them didn't have an education at all. They didn't learn much from you, but they could survive. Our problem today is we have people who are uneducated and unlearned. which means they have no survival. Mm-hmm. They're so dependent on everyone else that they can get nothing done. Some of our grandparents never learned how to read, yet we were always reading to them, and we thought they could read, and then we found out, you know, Mama couldn't read. What?
Yeah,
no.
What Dr. Carson said, his mom made them write those papers, and she would mark them all up, and she couldn't read them. But they thought she could.
And we need to understand that.
Right.
A lot of times, because our ancestry, they weren't the most educated people in the world.
But
they didn't play when it came to us learning.
Well, I think they were very well educated. They were just educated in a different way. I mean, there was an awful lot of people that couldn't read words, but they could read a tape measure.
That's true.
Do you have a Chicken George in your life? No, a fiddler in your life.
They got great skills.
Yeah.
They can fix a car. They can
right.
hear. They
right.
can listen to your car, tell you what's wrong with your car, and then right. fix it. We can't even read the manual.
They could do trigonometry in their heads. My grandfather could look at a list of 3-digit numbers on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and add them in his head.
But he couldn't read a stop sign.
He could read, but that's what I'm saying. Their minds were so more exercised than ours.
That's because they didn't have television.
In practical work.
Yes, the dumbing down of America.
Hey, you're listening to Tracy and Friends. Listen, Jerome Corsi is going to be with us in a few minutes. I'm going to take my break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of my break.
I know y'all can sing, too, now. Oh, let's go back a little bit. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, bless your heart, y'all.
Bosch is the quietest dishwasher brand in the U.S., and now Bosch dishwashers feature a new third rack that gives you 30% more capacity compared to Bosch two-rack models. See yours at your local Bosch retailer today.
At the Law Office of J.M. Shade, we focus on estate planning for the elderly and people with special needs. We'll help you find a way to pay for long-term health care, write your will, and set up a trust to avoid probate. Estate planning is essential for everyone. Don't delay and leave your family to deal with the stress after you're gone. Show them you care. Call us today, 866-606-6187. That's 866-606-6187. JMSElderLaw.com. Estate planning made simple.
Same-day state-of-the-art all-ceramic restorations. RagazineDentalCare.com.
You're listening to the new home for the Sean Hannity Radio Show, News Talk 600 WSOM.
I'm Hagen with your headline news. Youngstown State University has a new coordinator for its Veterans Affairs Department, a retired U.S. Army major. His name is Major Patrick Williams. He used to be in charge of the university's ROTC program. Lily Pond in Youngstown is closed until further notice after hundreds of fish have died in a small body of water. The fish were scattered all over the shoreline and on the surface of the pond. Officials took samples of the water for testing and said the pond had low levels of oxygen. For the third time since it opened in 2011, the Cheney Performing Arts School in Youngstown is looking for a new principal. Diane Rollins, who held the position, just resigned, citing personal reasons. The city school board accepted her resignation yesterday at its regular meeting. Rollins was at Cheney since February of last year. For WSOM News, I'm Harper Keegan.
The excitement of the new Chevrolet is back. 600WSOM.com wants to put you in the virtual driver's seat of today's most advanced vehicles and to give you a chance to win the Auto Law jackpot. Just go to our website and enter the virtual auto showcase. There's a door to click for each of the Chevy All-Star dealerships. Check out each dealership right online. Sales hours, service hours, even a map to their front door. And once you're in, you could be just one click away from winning the Auto Law jackpot. Your choice of $100,000 worth of vehicles. Let's see. How about five $20,000 cars? Or maybe three $33,000 SUVs? Or how about a pair of $50,000 luxury sedans? Wow. Mix and match up to $100,000.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We told you the excitement of the new Chevrolet is back at 600WSOM.com.
Howdy, howdy. I'm so excited. Charlie Staple Barbecue Sauce is at the grocery store. That's right. You can get Charlie Staple Barbecue Sauce right at the store. That means you can put back the thick and muddy. If you can't taste the meat, what's the point? Pick up the smooth and delicate Charlie Staple Barbecue Sauce. Next time you find yourself down at the market, remember, Charlie Staple Barbecue Sauce, the full cup of love.
Charlie Staple's Barbecue Sauce is now available at the grocery stores. Ask your grocer for a cup of love.
If you can't taste the meat, then what's the point?
Wounded warrior Dale Beatty is beginning the most important journey of his life.
Swift 1-2 is en route with urgent ASAC. Now, copy.
From the battlefield to home. Home to some very good medicine. His family's love. They'll be staying together at a Fisher House. Fisher House Foundation provides comfortable housing and other services to the families of wounded warriors and veterans while they receive care at military and VA hospitals. Remember those who serve and sacrifice. Make a donation to Fisher House, because a family's love is good medicine.
This is News Talk 600. 1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
Well, we're back. And you're listening to Tracy and friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And we have Jerome Corsi. And he's been with us before, and he's written a new book. And it's called What Went Wrong? The Inside Story of the GOP Debacle of 2012 and How It Can Be Avoided the Next Time. Hi, Jerome. How are you?
I'm good, Tracy. How are you?
I'm doing good. So you can tell me how this mess happened and how not to fix this, how to fix this mess so it'll never happen again. Can you please help me with this?
I'll do my best. I was with the Romney campaign for 3 weeks on the Romney airplane as press, traveling press, and the day of the election, Romney came on back and basically said he thought he was going to win. He felt like he hadn't even written a concession speech. So I wrote the book, What Went Wrong, because I had to say, okay, if Romney was this out to lunch, thinking that they had won, when in fact they got so badly beaten, lost 7 of the 8 swing states to Obama. What did Obama know that Romney had no clue of? And I concluded that it's kind of like, you know, in baseball, there's Moneyball, the book and the movie. You know, there's a whole new set of metrics to understand baseball by. It's not any longer batting average. It's times on base and slugging percentage. A whole new way of putting a team together. And what the Obama people figured out in 2012 was a whole new way of doing presidential elections, a whole new set of metrics, which changed the game. So that Romney thought, oh, we've got a great message, we're going to draw people to the polls, and the Obama people were sitting back saying, I don't think so, because we've got them already locked up.
So let me ask you this. In your opinion, how did we lose it? Because I understand the new form of marketing. I understand that. The metadata, I understand the tracking. That I comprehend. But where do you think it went wrong? Because I tend to think the manipulation of the inner city based upon the Electoral College and really getting a vast comprehension of that Electoral College and understanding how to shape those numbers, and then Romney not speaking to the evangelicals really made him lose.
Well, I think you're very close to right. The metrics and the computer system are very important for how Obama communicated with people, made them feel Obama knew them, loved them. Obama was playing classic interest group politics, and the core of the Democratic support is inner city. And if you take the inner cities out of America, you've got a very different America. Michigan with Detroit gone, New Jersey with Newark gone, New York City out of New York State. These are inner cities that are largely minority, increasing number of Hispanics, larger unemployment numbers, poverty, you're playing interest group and welfare politics in these cities, and Obama was a master at it. And you're right on how they calculated the numbers. What it came down to, yes, there were like 8 swing states, and of those, only 2 were must-do, Ohio and Florida. And then the Obama people knew they were running with their computers, their modeling of the electorate, 10,000-20,000 simulations of the election every day. They knew it came down to 50,000 voters in Ohio, which they could find in Cuyahoga County, in the African-American precincts of Cleveland and East Cleveland. And in Florida, it came down to 50,000 Hispanic votes, which the Obama operatives knew they could find in Broward and Dade County around Miami, counties around Orlando, and in Duval County around Jacksonville. And that's all they needed to do. And the Democrats focused their efforts and their messages on communications that African Americans were going to understand. I mean, all this, they're still doing it. All the Trayvon Martin race issues that the White House is broadcasting. Eric Holder knows there's not going to be a prosecution of George Zimmerman under civil rights laws or the federal statutes. but this whips up people. This gets them in the street. It makes them angry. Makes them mad about white people. Makes them mad. And Obama knows how to push the buttons to move the inner city base. And now that's increasingly including single women, a lot of white women, babies, you know, but unmarried. It's including a lot of college students who are aspiring, want to come from universities and get jobs. They're willing to believe even yet in the hope. And it includes Hispanics that see that, you know, but nobody's asked. This, again, is the failing. The other failing is centrist Republican candidates that basically agree with the Democrats, like Romney. I mean, why doesn't somebody ask, what has Barack Obama ever done for African Americans? Not just whip them up. He's good at that. How about the highest unemployment double digit in the African American community, maybe 40% among African American teenagers? How about Detroit bankrupt, no jobs, broken families, abortions, teenage pregnancies, and drugs? What's Obama done to cure these problems in the African-American community? And you've got many strong, conservative African-Americans, yourself included, you know, Reverend Harry Jackson. I can think of numbers who are out there trying to get the message across to African-Americans that don't just knee-jerk support the Democrats because they want your votes and then they don't do anything for you.
But see, if you look at back in 2012, and I watched this happen, I systematically watched this just evolve.
Right.
And I saw I'm very, very involved in the political system here.
Right.
And when they came out and talked about voter suppression in the state of Ohio.
Right.
And John Houston, who is the Secretary of State, decided that he was going to mail out an absentee ballot request to everyone in the state of Ohio at the expense of the state,
right,
as long as you were registered.
Yep.
And we have 35 days of voting, with 5 days being a golden week where you can register and vote in the same week. And then they said, because they wanted to close 3 days, or to Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, prior to the election, so that they can reconcile the books so that when they took them out to the polling locations, they would be accurate, to make sure that the vote was fair. And I don't think people understand how much work goes into counting millions of votes in one night, having a result by midnight.
Well, see, you know, this is the issue. You're hitting on it. I mean, the Democrats were playing all of the – how about extended voting in Ohio, which they did too, where they extended it 3 days after a big legal fight?
They extended it all the way up to election night, so we had to reconcile our books in the state of Ohio. And
right.
I asked Chris Redfern, who's the chair of the Democrat Party, why he allowed the political system to politicize the election process here in the state of Ohio. But they scared African Americans to the polls. Overwhelmingly,
yes, they did.
I saw people stand in line for hours singing church songs on a Sunday afternoon talking about they're going to put y'all back in chains when it had absolutely nothing to do with that. It all had to do with fairness. And they made race relations in America split.
Precisely.
Because things that are not racist, they're just good management, have now become racist decisions because the administration and their and the Democrat Party has turned this into race baiting. But when I talk about race, they tell me I'm baiting somebody.
Well, see, or if I talk about race, the issue is you've hit it. I mean, this is the manipulation of the voters, and it's the same in Hispanics. The you know, the Democrats have the Hispanics believing that if Romney won, they were all going to get thrown out of the country. You know, which is, first of all, not possible to do. You couldn't do it if you wanted to, and nobody wants to. That's the rub on this. But yet, the Democrats are extremely good at demonizing, you know, the guys who hate you, the rich who don't pay their fair share of the taxes, you know, somebody else who's responsible for your problems. That's that leftist theme. Obama's playing as if it were like an, like he's a master and playing it on an organ. He's playing that theme every time he gives a speech. He knows what he's doing, but it's more divisive than ever in America. And every time they get somebody like the Ohio Secretary of the State trying to make a concession to make it fairer, the Democratic operatives just take that and exploit it to their advantage, figure out a way to cheat with that system. And I saw the lines of the African Americans voting too. I saw the, you know, I was born in East Cleveland. You have to understand, I grew up on Ardenall Avenue in East Cleveland. I understand East Cleveland very, very well, having moved out of there and followed it in subsequent years. And the 96% of the African-American vote went to Obama, and the whipping up, getting people to the polls who were voting on fear, you know, this was masterfully done, even though I object to all of it. Without people questioning, what did Obama do for me other than give me an Obama phone?
Not realizing it started under Bush.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Obama phone started with Bush. Yeah, they did.
Go ahead.
Correct you are.
From what you know about Cleveland and the precincts in Cuyahoga County, is it possible that there were precincts with zero Romney votes?
It's possible, but, you know, I sure think that those are suspicious. I've thought it from the beginning. I said the Democrats are going to cheat for worth 5% of the vote in Ohio, and Romney had to win by more than 5%. But, you know, these Democrats were so good at knowing what they needed that even on election day they could tell how many more had to be bussed in. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
they got it so
they
could. They knew.
They knew.
They knew.
Without the course,
yeah.
Without the course, this is Reverend John Coates. You know, would you think that also had a major role to play in Romney failure? Is that there are two totally different types of political organizations? The Democrats,
yes,
and Obama campaign had never been dissembled from the first election. And the,
yes,
Romney campaign, everything was centralized out of Boston and archaic.
Precisely. What you had in the Obama campaign was from the bottom up. It was grassroots in nature. It was they wanted to empower the local people to have cell phones, iPads, to be in touch with Chicago. They were feeding information into Chicago, and they were, if you were an OFA worker, you know, for Organizing for America worker, you knew who your people were in your precinct that you had to go talk to. It got surveys filled out about them. You were doing all kinds of work with these people. Romney was top down. Everything out of Boston. I mean, I talked with Romney's campaign managers. They said, "Oh, we've done more door knocks than we did in 2008. And I said, well, what does a door knock to you mean? Well, it meant the old traditional way. If somebody wasn't home, they left a pamphlet. Well,
but,
I'm telling
you,
that doesn't work.
My problem is I worked with the campaign, and this is the problem that I have. You can't tell
right.
them anything. For some reason,
yeah.
they know everything.
Precisely.
And I sat down with the Romney people, and I said, listen, you need to go after the evangelical vote. You're not going to get a true, quote-unquote, evangelical to vote for a Mormon, talking about Jesus' brother is the devil,
right.
and wearing magic underwear, unless you speak to them. You better come up with a good... I'm serious.
And going well, after them does not mean an 11th-hour attempt.
That's correct. You need to strategically give them a conversation about how they can vote for you and blind their eyes to what you believe.
I put a whole section in What Went Wrong, saying that Romney, you know, Jack Kennedy confronted the issue of being Catholic. He spoke about it. He gave a speech in Houston about it. Romney avoided the issue, except for maybe that one meeting with Billy Graham. He avoided the issue. But the other point
you're
mentioning...
Billy Graham but Billy Graham, that's the issue. Billy Graham was not the water carrier for the evangelical movement that year.
He was not. And see, the other thing you're saying, which is very important, the other thing you're saying is very important, is the Romney people didn't listen to you.
No.
Whereas the Obama people were listening to what the field was saying. They listened. And the field drove the Obama campaign. These young computer guys all think from the field. They're the thinking of the younger generation is more user-driven than it is management-driven. You know, the users define websites. These guys and women who are these brilliant programmers write sites you've never heard about. I found a site yesterday that will drive traffic to you in an area where you have interest. And it's got 30 million people registered with it. I'd never heard of the site.
What's the name of it?
Oh, it's... I'd have to go back and look it up. It's like the Tumblr type sites, you know, where they're pushing things for you to look at.
Yeah,
and
I've been finding a couple of them, and I found one called Scoop It, and it's absolutely fabulous.
Right, but see, this is ground up, and that's the difference in thinking. Where the Republican Party is top down, and the Republican Party is still run by the Karl Roves, still run by the centrist establishment group, the John McCain's and the Lindsey Graham's. If the Republican Party is Karl Rove, Lindsey Graham, and John McCain, nobody needs the Republican Party.
Amen.
Well, now, that's pretty good.
Very good.
Very good. Great, Vic.
Yeah, Dr. Corsi is a rural dweller. What I see happening with the Electoral College scares me to death because it goes back to what they did to Rome, where they raped the countryside and sent the money to the cities.
Yeah.
And with the electorate more and more being focused on the cities, what's going to happen to those of us who live outside of those cities?
Well, you know, this is going to be, I'm very worried about this issue. I've spent a lot of time thinking about it. What went wrong? I write about it extensively. You really got to read it because I'm struggling with how this issue is going to play out. You're going to have more Detroits.
They just went bankrupt.
Well, that's just the beginning. Following it are going to be Philadelphia, Cleveland. You get the whole list of them.
Chicago.
You know, and smaller cities too. You know, smaller cities like, you know, Elizabeth and Patterson and New Jersey and Youngstown in Ohio, and, you know, what's Cincinnati doing? How, you know, all these cities, the inner cities don't have employment anymore, but they've got minorities. Hispanics are loading into the inner cities. Inner cities are very leftist. Their whole view of the world is government. Well, and they elect Democrats to be their mayors and their city councils. Well, you know, the social welfare approach to the cities, you could set the cities adrift. You could form, you know, let the cities be their own nation. because pretty soon the rest of this happened in the 60s, the rest of the people aren't going to pay for them and are going to refuse to pay for them. You know, I mean, the problem with Detroit is you've got all these pensions that have been promised, and the pensions are so exorbitant, so high, they're never going to be paid. Now, that compounds problems because these people who, you know, thought they had their pensions and earned it, it's unfair to them not to receive it. And there's going to be a lot of people going into retirement without the money they thought they were going to have. That's going to be a problem. But you got a police force in Detroit that doesn't live in Detroit. You got a fire department that doesn't live in Detroit. Nobody lives in Detroit. Detroit's down to half the population it was at the height. How about Cleveland? You know, Cleveland, again, the jobs are gone. The flats are closed. You know, the oil refineries that they have are still operating, but you don't have nearly the lake traffic that you used to have. Ohio's not manufacturing, and now Ohio's going to be taken out of coal mining. You know, what are people in Ohio going to do? And how are they going to pay for Cleveland when Cleveland is not generating revenues, not generating tax revenue, and it's a drag on the rest of the state? Yet Cleveland dominates the voting in Ohio.
So tell me, and guys jump in. Dr. Corsi, do we have you for 45 minutes, 40 minutes, 30 minutes?
Well, I think at the top of the hour, I got to go. I mean,
you know what?
You know that when
you come on here, you're supposed to book away at least a couple hours to hang out with us so we can just chat. You know that.
Well, you know, what I love being
on?
With you.
You just can't run away.
I love being with you, and I'll come back.
We just got to the top of this, because you got to tell me how to make sure that in 2014 and 2016.
They got me in 10 shows today, making sure everybody knows this new book is out.
What went wrong? The inside story of the GOP debacle of 2012.
Thank you.
Now tell me, how can I avoid it?
Well, we got to work. We got to reject the Republican establishment. We got to make it clear that the Republicans are going to go the centrist route. If they're going to go down the road of being Me Too Democrats, that we don't need them. That we're, you know, going to go in a different direction. Conservative does not automatically mean Republican. And that's something they got to understand. The opportunity to find and raise up additional candidates, we've got to continue finding people, and even if we have to work on a state and local level, within the communities that we can, you know, move out of the communities. Don't live in Cleveland. Live outside Cleveland. Don't live directly in Youngstown. Live around Youngstown. I mean, these decisions have to be made at a grassroots and home level. I mean, I can see people are going to move from some of these states. You know, do you really want to be in New York State, where New York City dominates the politics on a national level all the time? Do I really want, you know, how much do I pay to live in New Jersey in taxes when the cities like Elizabeth, Newark, Paterson, these are the cities that are dominating the politics and dominating the expense of the state. New Jersey is another state with pension problems, unfunded pensions, and unfunded health programs that have been promised to pensioners. I mean, there's no way they're going to be paid. Now, Christie has tackled some of that. He's conservative when it comes to economic issues, but Christie is also, you know, an Obama embracer and Obama lover, because he knows he can't win re-election as governor if he doesn't pull votes out of Newark. And this is a big problem. We've got a disconnect. It's true. You know, and so, you know, that moves our politics to the center, because the Republicans who are based on winning state elections, can they really afford to totally offend Cleveland entirely? You know, Jack Kennedy didn't defend. Jack Kennedy was pulling votes out of Cleveland, and he still lost to Nixon. But then again, you know, people forget that African Americans up until Franklin Roosevelt voted Republican. Eisenhower put in the first Civil Rights Acts. You know, Spielberg, when he did his movie on the 14th Amendment, neglected to emphasize that Lincoln was a Republican and the Congress was Republican. That's, you know, again, the Democrats want the narrative. 1948, the Dixiecrats ran out of the Democratic Convention because they were segregationists. People don't want to remember that history. And, you know, the Democratic Party has got to be identified as not being able to deliver. I mean, I think the system crashes because it economically can't afford to continue making and paying for all the promises Obama made. There's any way it can all be paid for.
Dr. Corsi, this is the issue, and this is what I see. I see cronyism manifestation in these urban settings because of the stronghold of bad contractual language in the unions.
Yep, I agree with you.
I see the exodus of the employment of jobs. I see the lack of skill level inside of the urban settings.
And inside of the schools, inside of the coming out of the public schools.
Absolutely. And the dumbing down of America.
Yeah.
And because of all of this, then on top of this, I see them all being dumped onto the pension guarantee fund and losing benefits, and then we picking up the pieces with Obamacare.
Yep.
With that, it does not breed success in the future.
And what scares me, too, is that along with this extreme leftism has always come fascism. I mean, I know they hate to say this, but, you know, the left is intolerant of anybody who disagrees with them. And it's not to me surprising that Obama has expanded dramatically the surveillance state and unleashed the IRS on conservatives. I'd be very surprised if they didn't haven't also run a campaign in Fox to make sure that people like me don't appear. Certainly Soros with the Media Matters, and every time any conservative gets a media appearance, they jump on it and abuse the person and the media. The Obama people, this is not the Democratic Party of John Kennedy. This is the Democratic Party of Bill Ayers. They're going to play like Chicago thugs, like communist Chicago thugs, like Axelrod grew up. And it's going to be very hard to combat, but you got to know how they play the game in order to beat them. That's why I wrote What Went Wrong.
Dr. Jerome, give us your closing statement. Tell us again where we can find your book, and it's What Went Wrong.
Book is What Went Wrong. It's about the inside story of the election of 2012. It's on Amazon. It's in bookstores, Barnes & Noble. .com, and also WND Superstore's got signed copies. And Tracy, thanks for having me back on your show again. I
was always a pleasure to have you.
I'm
thanks,
here.
Dr. Corsi. I appreciate it. It is What Went Wrong with Dr. Jerome Corsi. You can find it anywhere. It's a good read. It's an easy read. We thank you for coming in, and we'll see you again soon. I'm going to take a break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of my break.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren, the home for afternoons with Tracy and Friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. President Obama heading back to school, Knox College in Illinois, where he is about to kick off a series of speeches on the economy. ABC's Ann Compton has a preview from the White House.
This college address is a sequel to the first economic speech he made 8 years ago on the same rural campus, and the focus again is the middle class. President Obama intends to renew his faith in the need for the government to help stir the economy.
But Republican leaders aren't expecting much.
What's the point? What's it going to accomplish? Probably got the answer. Nothing. It's a hollow shell. It's an Easter egg with no candy in it.
House Majority Leader John Boehner, the American dream becoming more of a reality for a lot of people.
We have a nice new home sales
a report from the Commerce Department today. The annual rate of home sales is at 497,000. That's the best since May of 2008, a five-year high.
Economist David Crow at the National Association of Home Builders says it is a step in the right direction, but he adds that the housing market has a long way to go before it could be called healthy. Something is making a lot of people in a lot of states really sick. The first case diagnosed in Iowa last month, and now more than 250 people have come down with flu-like symptoms.
If you've had them for more than a few days, you want to go to your doctor, but you know, you have to tell them you've heard about this outbreak because there's special tests that have to be done. If they diagnose it properly, there's an antibiotic they can treat you to try and figure it out, to take care of those symptoms.
ABC News Senior Health and Medical Editor Dr. Richard Besser, the CDC says the bug could be a foodborne illness. Pope Francis celebrating his first public mass in Brazil in Portuguese.
Quanta alegria me dá de vir à casa da mãe de cada
brasileiro. This is the Pontiff's first foreign trip since becoming leader of the Roman Catholic Church. The Dow is down 49 points, NASDAQ up 4. This is ABC News.
Honestly, we canceled an appointment to have Jake euthanized to give Dynavite a chance to save this dog's life. Jake is an 8-year-old male Akita. His entire stomach and groin area, his face, his elbows, his ears, every orifice was just riddled with yeast and sores. His skin was always yellow because it oozed so horribly. We had a vet treat him, and Jake didn't respond at all. My son heard a commercial for Dynavite, DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa, the probiotic. Within 4 days, Jake started to heal. It was the most amazing thing I have ever seen. The yeast is receding, and now his belly is completely cleared up. It chokes me up. It brings tears to my eyes. Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
The government may be closer to banning menthol cigarettes. It's published a new report that says the flavored smokes may be more addictive than other kinds.
They're easier to start smoking, harder to quit. And the FDA says menthol cigarettes have a special appeal to young smokers.
Kids are more likely to start smoking on menthol cigarettes. Menthol cigarettes are associated with a higher level of dependence to nicotine.
Mike Zeller describing some of the findings in an FDA scientific review of those minty smokes. Now there's a 60-day public comment period that could result in restrictions or a ban, even though that same report says the risk of disease is the same smoking menthol or regular cigarettes. Scott Goldberg, ABC News.
The town crier who announced the birth of the Prince of Cambridge with shouts of oye, oye on the steps of St. Mary's Hospital in London 2 days ago apparently didn't have an official royal role. Tony Appleton acknowledges no, he wasn't invited, but says he is a real-life town crier in Romford, England. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Hey, what you doing?
It's easier than ever to book a room and save with the Motel 6 app for your smartphone or iPad. Download it today and start saving big. No wonder they call them smartphones. Motel 6. We'll leave the lights on for you.
The Druschel Financial Report on News Talk 600, Saturdays at 8:30. Bob Druschel discusses investment strategies for today's fast-moving financial markets. That's Saturdays at 8:30 on News Talk 600 WSOM.
Going back to the My Vegas thing, you cost me a lot of misery and all total $2,700 in doggy fees, and all it took was one container of Dynavite. 2 pounds, 3 ounces, and my dog has been cured. Abby's a 5-year-old silky terrier. She had like chicken pox on her belly, clusters of bumps on her back, and she was allergic to like 70 some odd things. So the dermatologist, it was like, oh yeah, just keep giving her needles every 10 days. But she's not clearing up. And then it came up on my radio, Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
And I was like, oh, that's it, that's it. I give her the Dynavite after 5 weeks. And one morning there was nothing there. And I'm like, oh my God, she's all clear. There wasn't one blemish on her body. Her fur is beautiful. She is totally happy. She is as healthy, bump-free, pimple-free, shiny, silky. It turned our lives around. So thank you very much for Dynavite. I couldn't be happier. Dynavite's the bomb.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit aiwhealth.com.
Boardman Frame House Gallery, a professional frame shop and art gallery at the Mark Shopping Center in Poland at Routes 224 and 680. We specialize in original, limited, and antique lithographs of both renowned nationally published artists and local artists. We have over 30 years of award-winning custom design and archival framing. We give your artwork a unique presentation that enhances its value for life. Let your home or office express something individual and unique with a fine art limited edition print signed by the artist and numbered. You'll find many unique and affordable fine art editions. Visit us in the Mark Shopping Center. Find the Greenwich Workshop Catalog. And for any print or canvas you order, you get 50% off the frame for that fine art edition. Find us on Facebook or call us at 330-758-5795. That's 330-758-5795. Fit Family. Unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austintown designs a personal exercise program just for you, with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austintown receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for, with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
We're back with Tracy and Friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM. 347-945-5229 or toll free 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at tracyandfriends.com or 600WSOM.com. Now, here's Tracy.
Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll-free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at tracyandfriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, this is Tracy and Friends here on WSOM, and I love when people listen to the show. Joy is at Pet Salon, the Pet Spa Salon, and mm-hmm. She says, yes, they can make your dog smell like different flavors. Why doesn't my dog smell like a flavor?
Because you don't ask him to do it when you take her to get her a bath.
Why would you make your dog smell like a fruit?
Because you don't want them to smell like dog.
I can't tell you, my daughter loves her beagle to death, but she says she will never have another beagle.
Why?
She runs a Roomba every day and vacuums every other.
What's a good flavor for a Beagle? Coconut, maybe.
Coconut. Coconut's good.
I tell you, coconut is the flavor of the month at the Pet Spa
Salon. There you go. So take your Beagle and make her smell like coconut.
It's my prophetic ability. That Pentecostal gift coming through, though.
So make your dog smell like a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I have to ask Joy if she paints dog paws.
I bet you she does.
I bet she does, too.
I bet you she's got little doggy shirts and everything there for them.
Oh, they do. They have a little bit of everything. It's really, it's a great place, and it is a spa for dogs, and it's called Pet Spa Salon. It's located on Western Reserve, not too far from Glenwood, and you can call them at 330-758-4444. Again, that's 758-4444. They're on Western Reserve by Glenwood.
I got to go down there just to watch them give a cat a bath. I ain't seen a cat yet that you get underwater.
I was talking about this on Monday, and Ben said that it all has to do with the temperament of the cat. If the cat has doesn't have as much fur,
mm-hmm.
in the wintertime the cat would want to do warm.
Okay.
So the water would feel good to them as long as it was the right temperature. Hey, how you doing? Have a seat.
But like the rest of us, they don't like cold water.
Yeah. You want to find the right temperature. And then if you start the cat when they're kittens, then they don't mind as much. It's when you have, you find a stray, and then you want to put the stray in a tub and see what you get.
Eaten alive is what you'll get.
Hey, South Carolina, is this South Carolina 1 or South Carolina Blind?
This is number 1.
Hey, South Carolina 1, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I tell you what, if anybody wants a good dose of serving the public, they should be a property manager.
I thought you got paid for that.
Yeah, I get paid for that. But it's kind of hard when you're dealing with individuals, and just kind of, I guess, just a reflection on our society. You know, years ago, people didn't kind of put their parents away or log them away and just not pay any attention to them. But when a person starts to kind of develop dementia and stuff like that, trying to explain to them different things, it gets kind of hard.
Hey, South Carolina, hold on. Alabama, your mic is on. I got a guest in the studio. I've got to bring him in. He just walked in the door, and I got to make. Hey, talk to your mic and see if your mic's working, Greg.
What do you want me to say?
Hey, his mic's not working, John. You'll find out everyone that comes into the studio, you only get about 3 seconds of being company,
mm-hmm.
and then you become a friend.
Okay.
And then you get to we put you to work.
That's okay.
Oh, a little bit more. Turn him up a little bit more, because he's going to talk soft. He's a nice guy.
I can talk loud if you want.
It's on max.
Alabama, how you doing, honey?
I'm doing all right.
Are you just listening in? Get out. You ain't got nothing to say?
Well, I mean, what am I supposed to say?
I don't know. Hold on. Listen, I've got John Coates, Reverend John Coates, in the studio with me. He is a friend of mine. He is the executive director for Right to Life. And then I have a gentleman who just walked in the door, and he's going to tell me everything I want to know about genetically altered seeds and Monsanto and how this works, and he's going to be my brain trust, and his name is Greg.
Mm-hmm.
How are you today?
Well, I can tell you a thing or two about that.
Hold on, Greg. Hold on, South Carolina. Hold on, Alabama. You can't tell me nothing about that. The man is – are you a geneticist?
I have
– No, I used to – oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to me.
You have a degree in genetics?
Yes, ma'am.
So, what was your childhood like?
I majored in biology and genetics in college. I'm actually a teacher now. I teach. I teach high school now. I teach high school VOAG, vocational agriculture. I taught in Canton for 10 years, and now I'm back in this area teaching. Had a real good childhood. Grew up on a farm.
How long have you been teaching?
22 years.
So you were studying genetics when genetics wasn't the popular topic of discussion, was it?
I went into biology, and you need another major or sub-major with your biology, and I went into genetics also.
So what is it about genetics that we need to know that we are not? Because, I mean, people are talking more about genetics now. And designer, we have designer genetics and we're genetic engineering. And you hear every now we pop up with a Monsanto and you got a, you know, corn and, you know, they're telling me talk about cloning and sheepy and all them people and designer babies. Mm-hmm. Is that real?
All of those things are possible. Many of them are going on. One of the things that I would tell you first off, though, is and I think there's a commercial right now on TV. Just because you see it on the internet does not mean it's true.
Greg, I heard the other day that Kentucky Fried Chicken has their own chicken farms, and they're making chickens with four drumsticks.
Right, exactly. You'll hear things like that, and you will see pictures, Photoshop. You know, they can get things to look however they want. Many of the things, you know, with GMO, which is genetically modified organisms, genetically altered, as you spoke about it, a lot of the things that the scientists will come up that don't agree with it, they can make that happen. They can do things bad as well as people can do things good. And I think one of the last things I read was they had some potatoes that made rats sick, and they were genetically modified potatoes. And that was true. They did make the rat sick. But what they didn't tell you is how they modified those potatoes. They put a natural enzyme in those potatoes that make people sick and make organisms sick all over, make mammals sick in general. So,
but the question is, well, why would they manufacture and design a potato that made people sick?
So they can say that on the internet.
You got to have something to go on the internet.
You got to have something, right.
Let me ask this. Let me slow this down a little bit, and I think you're going to be with us for a little while. You're going to hang out with us today. That's what I hear.
We'll see. Door's closed.
Did you notice there's a lock on it? I wonder why there is a lock on that door. We hear good and bad about genetically altered foods. My understanding, it's been going on a very long time. Give us some history on it.
Well, it depends on what you want to term as a genetically altered or genetically modified food. GMO, basically its roots have only been around with us for about, on a large scale, that we've been using in agriculture and things for about 25 years. There was precursors to that. However, selective breeding has been around for a long time. And selective breeding is just maybe taking the two best animals on your farm or with artificial insemination, maybe the two best animals in the United States, and mating those together to get a superior product. But the GMO that we're talking about now has really only been around probably a little more than 25 years, but you've heard about it a lot more in the last 25 years. It's starting to use, in agriculture, I would say between the corn and the soybeans right now, and I don't know the exact numbers on this, but it would be in the upper 90% are genetically modified in some way.
Wow.
Why? Let me ask this, because I am one of those, I don't know if Six told you a whole lot about me. I'm one of those right-wing evangelical nuts.
I listened on the way up here. I got that little bit.
So, as one of these, you know, evangelical nutcases, mm-hmm. I believe God made everything perfect. Why would we go and alter something and think we can make it better?
Okay, to go with your way, if God made everything perfect, didn't he give you the ability to make things better? Norman Baylog, and it's one of the best quotes I saw, he was a Nobel Peace Prize winner. The world has the ability to feed 10 billion people. The question is, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, the question is, will they be allowed to use the technology to feed those people?
Okay.
100 years ago, a cornfield would yield maybe, if you had an excellent year, 40 to 50 bushel. Now we're looking at yielding 240 or 50 bushel. And it's because of our selective breeding and because of the GMO, the genetically modified, that they've been able to do that.
And the corn's brighter in color. It tastes better.
Does it taste better? Or
if you want to go sweet corn, yeah. There's sweet corn that will taste better. They've figured out how to increase the sugar content. They can figure out how to make it insect resistant and all of those things.
How do you make it insect resistant and then not hurt me?
Well, the main way that they do it is through a natural it's a natural occurring organism called, and it's a long thing, but BT for short. And it's toxic to the caterpillars or the insect larva, so that you don't get the worms in the corn, and it doesn't weaken their stalks. And they've injected into those corn seed a way that the corn now produces itself. It's found in many plants that you would already eat and that animals eat, but they found a way to take it out of those plants and put it into corn.
And it doesn't hurt you?
No.
And you're not using as many chemical insecticides?
Correct. Because we can use that and we can use those, we don't then have to spray the sweet corn as much. And those, some of those insecticides, which are heavily regulated.
Hold on, guys. Hold on.
I just want to ask a question. Are very toxic.
I hear you coming. Hold on. Let's build a case before we all jump in, because I hear us jumping. So when we look at genetically modified, is it regulated?
Oh, extremely regulated. It costs millions and millions of dollars to get something through the FDA to get into our food chain. Last I saw, it was about $26 million to get something, any trait, through and into the food chain.
Go ahead, Stix, because I'm going to take care of the house first before I go to the phone.
Yeah, well, I mean, I brought Greg here to answer your questions, because, I mean, you were talking about seedless grapes, which are a naturally occurring thing.
How is that? Now, wait a minute. How can you make a grape without a seed and tell me it's natural? That doesn't make sense to me. I'm confused.
They have taken, and what they do is they are producing, I guess one way is if you take a horse and a donkey and you cross it, you get a mule.
Right. Mules don't produce.
They're sterile.
Right.
So what they've done is they've produced these offspring that are sterile. And a lot of times when they're sterile, you know, they can't have seeds. We don't want seeds in them, seedless watermelon. However, you do need what's called a pollinator, because when we grow these grapes or when we grow these watermelon that don't have seeds, they will not produce on a normal plant. We have both male and female parts. Mm-hmm. And on a seedless, you just have the female, and you don't have the male, and you have to get a pollinator, and then pollinate them, and they will not produce. There won't be seeds there because we've specially done that.
As a bee would pollinate.
Well, bees carry the pollen from the flowers, mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, so grapes are... Seedless grapes are genetically modified. Yes? No. Help me out, because he told me no, and
no,
I'm saying...
No, they are not genetically modified. They are. That's selective breeding, and they've found out how to do that. They are not actually on the seedless grapes and seedless...
Then explain the difference of genetically modified versus crossbreeding, because maybe that's a confusion that some of us get.
Selective breeding is like trying to get desired traits through breeding, which takes years and years and years and years to do.
Right.
Genetically modified, we can take the traits out of, if we can find something that has a trait we want, we can now insert that trait into another plant. They've been doing it for years and years with apples, where they would actually cut plants apart, and they would take, because this plant had better root system and this plant had better fruit, they'd cut them apart and they'd graft them onto each other.
Right.
Well, now we sort of are doing that to make it a little bit simpler. We're doing that at the genetic DNA level, where we're taking parts from one and putting those in or grafting those in at the DNA and the molecular level.
Okay. Go ahead, Alabama. I know you had something you wanted to jump in with.
No, I was just, I mean, there's a few things. I mean, when I hear that, I think of, this isn't my question. This is kind of a statement, but it reminds me of what the fallen angels were doing before the flood. They were doing stuff like this. I mean, I've heard that described, but the point I was trying to make.
You've been talking to Jeff.
Huh? Well, I guess the guy that's talking. No, but if you look at the first 100 years ago, they say 15% of people died of cancer. Now it's upwards of 70, and we don't think we really understand the magnitude of what we're doing. And I do think that this is one of the common factors.
Let's talk for a moment about it.
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
This is one of the common factors, is that we're doing stuff like this, and I think it's dangerous. I mean, of course, if they tell you, you know, something, this is how it's done, I just don't believe it's always good to do it. Even though you may get these results, there are effects on the body. I mean, I'm just kind of trying to see. I want to hear his opinion on that.
Well, my
because yeah, you can eat something, but just because you can eat it and don't drop dead, don't mean that you know when you're 40 some years old, 60, you know, you got people getting prostate cancer in their 30s.
But we live, but we're living longer.
Yeah, exactly what you just said. You just.
But we're living longer for other reasons too.
Hold on, Alabama, two way.
You said 15% of the people. I think you said 100 years ago. 15% of people died of cancer. Well, 100 years ago, what was our life expectancy?
49, 50, 55.
Right. Now the life expectancy is pushing 80. So more people are going to die of cancer because those are things that have gone wrong in your body and you get tumors. And it's just like if you look at any pet or anything, as they get older, one of the risks that they're going to have is getting cancer. And that's something that happens. And hopefully we can find a cure for it or something. But, I mean, I don't think it's because of – I'm sure that there are some things that cause cancer and there's some things over the years. I mean, DDT and some of those things, that the sprays. I don't –
It weighs different ways. Would you say that? It depends. I mean, because I look at smoking. The tobacco of my parents, it's not the tobacco that they smoke today.
Right.
When you used to open up a pack of cigarettes, there was an aroma of tobacco that came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all of the additives, the tobacco that they're smoking today is not the same. I think we use the same thing on food, and we may not want to do that.
And also, I think we're trusting the government. He's at the Food and Drug Administration. I mean, it's a lot of those guys are the same guys that go work for these pharmaceutical companies once they, you know, finish working with the government. So there is a conflict of interest a lot of times with trusting the same people who every time you cut a commercial on, did this drug kill somebody? Call us. So, I mean, is it really some good system that we have? You know, because a lot of people getting killed.
Alabama,
hey, Tracy.
I got a lot of calls today, so I got to make sure I get them all in. But I appreciate that one. That was good. He got a point there.
No, he does have a point. And I'd love to sit here, and I would love to tell you that I'm 100% sure every one of these are 100% safe. And with new technology comes new tests, and we have to find out. And I would hope in our best interest that they are doing what they can do. I can tell you that, you know, that if we did not have these things, your grocery bill would probably be 3 to 4 times what it is right now.
Why would that be? Why is that? Why would
our yields right now, like I said, I mean, our yields have gone up 500-600% because of these things.
So,
Tracy, you and I.
Well,
are
I can
age.
Differ. I can beg to differ with you.
Alabama,
I can beg to differ with him on that.
Tracy, you and I are the same age. I remember the newspaper article when Glenn Grover broke 100 bushel an acre in Carroll County.
Right.
That's how fast our yields have increased.
Okay. Pianchi, go ahead.
Yeah, but it don't taste the same.
Yeah,
I'm old enough
to
remember what
that.
Tomato really tastes like. And what I want to ask this question, now, farmers have to go back to the same source for seeds every year, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, there are several seed companies that you go to. I mean,
Your plants can't, I mean, you don't have the old way of producing seeds.
The open pollinated? Do you save your own seeds? No.
So what type of price impact, the cost impact has it had on farmers?
Well,
or does it balance out?
With the yields going up, there are seed corns that you can buy that will cost you $300 a bag. And I can remember paying $60 a bag, or my dad paying $60 a bag.
And I guess that's why there's enough corn for ethanol now.
Well, how do politics come into play with these seeds?
Well, there's
especially
Montana,
international politics,
Montana,
like
earlier.
International politics, like if you don't open up your quartan fields to us, we don't give you no seeds, and now your fields are sterile to the original seeds. What happens?
No,
that can't happen.
It's free. It's free market. I mean, there's enough seed companies out there that it's free market, it's capitalistic, and it works pretty well. I mean, they have to keep their seed costs at a pretty, you know, competitive rate, or people aren't going to buy them. But they also have to give you a good product. I mean, farmers are loyal to the fact that they better make money, and if they can't make money and feed their cattle, they can't buy that seed.
Well, let me ask you this also.
Hold on. I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600.
Hello,
the number
Nick,
is 3679455229. We'll be right back.
Wow. Well, you know, something must beat the GMO foods because Obama went over to Africa with like $100 million or $400 million, and he was doing a lot of bribing.
Well, my thing is with a lot of these food and the FDA that I can't trust. What you have to be careful about with your food is if you look up what is allowed to be called natural and artificial flavors. Mm-hmm. Just those two, when you look at something that's called all natural and you go and flip it over, it'll say apples, orange. I drank a juice the other day, and then it had artificial flavor, natural flavors. Mm-hmm. Natural flavors is not what you consider natural. That could be some type of petroleum-based substance. It could be anything. They put enough of that in there to make this stuff last. For example, Walmart. I used to work at a place called Winn-Dixie as a produce manager, and Walmart, this is when I was like, wow. He said that the guy was like, meat shouldn't last but 2 days, 2 to 3 days at the most. You can go to Walmart in certain cities and see meat, and it's 2 weeks. I mean, they can go 2 weeks. That's not normal meat they're selling you. So, I mean, I don't care what nobody – I mean, that's just my personal opinion. Hell, I think there are ramifications for doing that type of stuff to food.
I took a pack of hamburger in one store and hid it behind the Rice Krispies, about 2 or 3 Rice Krispies boxes, and came back about 4 days later. It was still back there.
I mean, like I said, I mean, it's just dangerous when you get into this meat and what they're doing to our food. I don't trust it, and I think that – him, I think the guest she has, I think he's a cool guy. I'm just saying he's been taught a certain way. So it's not like he's going to, you know what I'm saying? What he's doing is giving us an insight of how they think. But
yeah,
the point is like when you go talk to a doctor's going to tell you what they told him at the university to say. It's mm-hmm. not going to be, you know what I'm saying? So there are some doctors that will tell you, yeah, you can cure cancer naturally with this and that. Then there's some doctors that's just like, no, that's impossible. You can't treat it. You have to use a drug. That's homeopathic doesn't work. Well, 60 years ago, until the Carnegie and Rockefeller got involved with all these different people, it was a certain way. So,
Piaki, are you telling us that Rice Krispies is really Hamburger Helper?
Yeah. That pack of the hamburger was still, you know, looking red and stuff after I went back there and after I hit it.
We saw that big
try it out yourself. I mean, you take a pack of hamburger. You ain't stealing. Just put it back in behind the Rice Krispies.
Okay.
And come back a few days later.
Well, there's that pink slime stuff that they put in it. Remember that big scandal that was in the news about?
Yeah, I heard about that. I don't eat that stuff myself, man. I just don't trust it. And you can't blame people for not trusting it. You can't blame countries for not wanting to accept it.
I don't trust.
And that's where
the
politics comes involved.
Yeah, because I don't trust the FDA at all. You know, the gentleman, and again, no disrespect to Tracy's guest, but because he is the guest, but remember thalidomide? Remember Reno?
Oh, yeah.
Remember Fen-Phen? Remember all those other drugs?
Hell, look at hair relaxers, man. Look what they're causing.
Yeah, and that stuff for diabetes, I forget what the heck the name of it is. It wasn't even on the market 6 months. And then and Alabama's right. You see these commercials on TV, or you see the ones for the drugs, and then 15 seconds of telling you how great your life will be and 45 seconds of disclaimers, you know, of what that drug can do to you.
And that's the problem I have with most people. If you go talk to an average doctor, pharmaceutical or pharmacy major, they're just going to tell you, well, this is for treating this. This is all these people know is what drugs to prescribe from these companies.
Yeah.
That's it. They don't understand how to really treat and cure disease. They just know, okay, this is the drug that I'm supposed to use. And when it comes to food, I mean, what sense does it make to even couple food and drugs together in the first place? That lets you know right there some type of racket going on.
And what sense does it make to be coupling vegetable and animal genes together in the first place? You know, and they can't say that the stuff tastes I remember what tomatoes and chicken used to taste like. What you eat today don't taste like though. If I want to take a real watermelon, I go to Egypt, and those watermelons taste good. But when you come back here and start chopping into these watermelons,
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I believe in when he made that point about we wouldn't be able to sustain. I think that the corporations got involved in the business and run the mom and pop farmers out of it. So it's not a viable business for a lot of farmers to grow and specialize in that. That's so that you're getting into business now when you start talking about, well, we wouldn't be able to produce enough. then that depends on how.
I disagree with that.
Yeah, it depends on the scientific. Yeah, because we don't have the necessity anymore, because now it's like you want to do something, you got some land, some corporation's going to come take over, and they'll front all the money and put up the farm and do everything, and you just get a percentage. That's how it works now. It's not like it used to be. So you can't say it. What would have happened had they not done that?
Did you see that big lawsuit, Monsanto? They had one farmer using their new super seed for corn, and the farmer next door, some of the seed blew onto his land. And of course, what does seed do? Grows. Well, they discovered it was on this farm guy's land.
And he didn't have a license to use it.
And they sued him, and they won. They sued him for stealing the seeds, and he didn't steal the seeds. It was an act of God. I mean, the wind blew the seeds onto his land. He didn't, you know.
And see, that's the kind of bad taste that leaves in your mouth toward this corporation. And I know what they do overseas. You know, they go over and threaten, cut off aid if you don't, and all that
number
kind of crazy stuff.
347-945-5229. Let me do that number again. It is 347-945-5229. And you're listening to us on WSOM AM 600. And I have Mr. Greg Sharp in studio with me. And he is he teaches vocational agriculture in one of our local schools, but he also has a degree in genetics. And Sticks, I have to say, he is one of the best producers I have, since he's the only one. But, you know, we've talked about genetically modified foods, and I talk about my grapes and my seeds and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of things come our way, and you see a lot of things going on in the news. With the 24-hour news cycle, with the Internet, you see, you know, Sticks is talking about, you know, making chickens with four legs. And you need to know what's true, what's not true, where to go on the Internet. The Internet is full of information, and a lot of it's good and a lot of it's bad. But you need to know what you're going to, what you're reading, and be able to critically think so that you're not getting misinformation. You look on Facebook, and some things are just stupid. But if you don't know that it's stupid, you'll take it as fact. And we need to be careful of that. So we have Mr. Greg Sharp, a friend of mine from Right to Life, Reverend John Coates from Columbus is here with me. He's just sitting in. Sticks is here with me. We've got South Carolina, Not-So-Blind Mike. Pionki's in there.
Tracy, we got a restaurant here in St. Louis.
You know, Pookie Rayway.
Except for the blind. No offense to the blind.
He is blind.
Is that right?
Tracy.
Absolutely. The only blind carpenter I've ever talked to.
Absolutely. Wow. He is a blind guy, and he's a carpenter.
Wow.
And he uses
Tracy,
nails and hammers.
We have a restaurant here in St. Louis called Arkansas Chicken.
Yeah, I'm talking about you, Mike. Alex is in the room, and Alabama's in the room. And so we've got a nice cross-section, and we want to hear from you also. That number is 347-945-5229. It's 38 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. And I have Mr. Sharp. I you know, I appreciate you teaching.
Some days I appreciate it.
Some days.
So, Mr. Sharp, what you're saying is with those seedless grapes that they naturally grow that way and have no ability to reproduce into the next generation. So they're not heterosexual grapes. Are you saying they're gay grapes?
No, I did not say that.
I just had to say that for my gay friends to just get them going today.
Listen, don't change, Mike, do not change the topic. You know we have ADD here, and it's
easy for us
to move.
My heart rose there a minute ago when you screwed up the phone number. The other day I tried to be a little playful with you and do the call letters and got them backwards, dyslexic.
Oh, you haven't seen anything yet. But I miss my name sometimes. But so let me go back to my conversation.
Yeah.
Here's
why I don't trust the FDA. Mr. Sharp, you remember thalidomide? You remember Fen-Phen, Redux, a whole bunch of new heart medicines, diabetes medicines that were only out in the market less than 6 months in the last 3 years that they've had to pull off because people were dropping dead from it?
Yes.
And the FDA is as corrupt as they come because all their funding comes from the pharmaceutical companies that they run the tests for.
But on the other side of that, though, Mike, you remember saccharin and the saccharin scare and they pulled it all off the market?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 10 years later, they discovered that hey, saccharin's not as bad as we thought it is. I mean, if you give a mouse 200,000 units of saccharin, guess what's going to happen? He may develop cancer.
But about 2-3 years ago, the FDA stopped releasing any more daily information regarding what the heck? It just popped out of my head the name of it, the substitute they came up with saccharin. aspartame, because there were thousands of complaints a year about that, that they were documented. So they stopped even responding under Freedom of Information about anything regarding aspartame.
Because the bottlers are making a lot of money on diet sodas.
Yeah, and you also then have Monsanto, who has patents on these genetically modified seeds, and that farmer who was sued because his neighbor bought Monsanto seeds and the wind blew some onto his land and they grew naturally. And or of course, I should say, they didn't grow naturally, they grew, of course. And that farmer was sued for stealing the seeds, and he lost the case.
And he lost the case because he didn't steal the seeds.
Well, one of the questions, one of the problems you have to look at is if you had money.
Go ahead. What'd you say, Alabama?
No, I was just saying, I mean, if you have the money and you're some big mega corporation, you can pump out, if you're AstraZeneca or Pfizer, you can pump out 100 chemicals and get them passed through the FDA. They all kill people. They all cause, class action suits.
Yeah.
And you're making $100 billion and you're only losing, and it works, and nobody's complaining, nobody's marching against these people. But the housing bubble, people are trying to knock on people's doors and harm people. So it's a double standard. And so when he mentioned the FDA, it's nothing against him because I don't know him out, but I just know, just from watching the TV, anybody with a brain can see that you can't trust the government and just about anything they tell you.
I got a question, and because I don't trust the government, but once I get educated on what I'm doing, I make better choices. I was a huge Equal aspartame user for my coffee. And when I found out that aspartame, and I researched what I was doing, and I found out it was not good, they still sell aspartame. Aspartame is in most of your gum.
Mm-hmm.
Aspartame is everywhere. Mm-hmm. But because of the additive that I was using in my coffee, I was using so much because I drink so much coffee, it was just not good. And when I found out that it has the possibility of triggering MS, mm-hmm. I quit, and I found stevia, which is a natural plant. Mm-hmm. You can't get away from it, but what you can do is you can get educated on it. And it's just that simple. You can't get away from all this. You can't go, unless you're going to become Amish or Mennonite.
But Tracy, the human body is resilient.
Hold on, Alabama. And even the Amish and the Mennonite. Getting the grip, and they say, okay, we can't beat them, we won't join them all the way, but we will figure out a way to cohabitate in this new world, and we're going to have to learn how to do that, because there's no way. When we were talking during the break, we were talking about seeds, and I was talking to them. I met a guy who's a farmer down in southern Ohio, and they were talking to me about the GPS on and watering and planting. And how they don't water and plant anymore. And I said, so going out and throwing seeds in the ground like my grandma and grandpa did in their big garden is no longer agricultural industry-wise. It just doesn't work that way.
I'd just like to say one thing about the FDA, what he did say. And those things and the different drugs and things that you did talk about, there have been problems. I mean, and I understand that. But the other thing you have to look at is the reason how I'm going to tie this in, with the GMOs, one of the largest concerns is there's going to be allergic reactions among people. And that some kids might have allergic reactions, just like they might have a peanut allergy. They could have an allergy to the GMO product that we're putting in there, and we could have some problems. It's something we definitely need to look at. It's something we need to monitor, because any kid having an allergic reaction and passing on is too many. Just like any drug manufacturer making a drug like the fen-phen or some of those things, and if they have a problem with it, it's too many. But how many people did that drug save or help?
It helped a lot.
But the difference between a drug and a consumable food is that when there's a new drug on the market and they advertise that drug, they market it, they list all of these side effects that you could have. I mean, the list is long. It takes, if it's a 60-second spot, it might take 30 seconds of the 60-second spot to name what all these side effects may be. But we don't get that with food. All we get is nutritional fact chart, maybe on the label of the food. We don't receive that information.
If you take GMO corn and non-GMO corn, you have to go through hundreds, if not thousands, of tests before you can tell it's GMO corn. And that's because there is no nutritional difference, and there is no basic difference in it.
Yes, there is. I've seen it on the Internet.
Yeah, well.
Just the other day.
Yeah.
And let me see this. Even with your – so drugs – and we're talking about food today.
Right.
But drugs, when you have the side effect listing, and I've had people on to talk about that,
mm-hmm.
whoever is a part of the clinical trials, if you get hit by a car and you die, if you were actually a part of the trial,
wow.
death has to be listed.
Wow.
And I don't think we realize that. And so it's like with anything else. When you look at the dropout rate of kids in school,
mm-hmm.
and they say 70%, it's not 70% of that class. It's 70% who came in the ninth grade, no matter where they moved to through to the 12th grade. If they left the school, went to another school, and dropped out, it's still a part of the dropout rate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when kids leave school,
yes.
and they go to another state,
right.
and we can't verify they're there, and that state doesn't have, we have to list them as dropout.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a 70% dropout rate only because the whole area of the community changed and everybody left and went to another school and graduated.
So not only Tracy,
hold on, hold up.
Oh, Tracy, you just said something very interesting. And you know what's funny? I was working at the Alabama State Department of Education as a contractor.
No.
And we developed that same thing to find out. And it's very hard for that to happen, what you just described. I just want you to know
that. And I know that. And that's what I'm saying. It was an example. But we need to understand, when you look at some of the side effects, when you look at what the listings are, and you have to learn that when we turned our legal system into commerce
mm-hmm.
and not service, you know, when he's talked about medicines that have helped people, there was a medicine that was really beneficial that they took off the market. It killed maybe 100 people, but millions of people were on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know what genetic gene they had that just altered them not to be able to have that. And if that was not studied as part of the trial, yes, it's going to be pulled from the market. So we cannot not trust everybody.
People are still begging for the Celebrex. So.
You understand?
Right.
I see what you're saying, Tracy, but then at the same time, there are a lot of situations where, I mean, people are, even though, like, there was a guy in the 70s that had, he was giving people bread. And it was high in fiber, and he was saying it would prevent colon cancer. And they threw the guy in jail, threw the bread away, and come to find out now that they have this. Oh, yeah, diet's high in fiber. So, I mean, the government isn't exactly quick to turn on a dime. They're just not.
But this is what I'm saying, though, and I don't want to get into a government conspiracy conversation today. This is the issue. We have now come into the age of most of the food that you eat inside of your produce department in some way has come from a genetically altered, would you say? And even if it says organic, that doesn't mean it hasn't been altered.
I don't know the rules on organic. I know that there are some things with what they can spray and what they can have in the soil as far as fertilizer goes. I don't know about GMO. I would think they wouldn't be allowed, but maybe they would.
But majority, they've been touched by something.
Correct.
Because you can't produce and the way that we're doing right now, if you're telling me that we're yielding this kind of corn and it comes in a bushel, when I go out and buy my corn, I don't know what it is. You follow what I'm
right.
I mean, I was talking to a cattle farmer, and he was telling me that they've been, you know, what did you call it?
Cloning? Embryo transfer?
Yeah. They've been doing that for a long time.
Yes.
So we don't know that we're eating cloned meat, but you really, most of us are eating meat that has been genetically altered to make the best or designer.
When I was a produce manager, Tracy, we had a organic section, and one of the biggest ways that I could tell was that the organic, it rotted faster. It just did. Whereas the normal or quote unquote, whatever they call it, that wasn't like that. It was that stuff will last. It looked better, but the organic section, it didn't look as good.
Is that
but
true?
A lot of people that came over there, they said it tasted better to them. That's what they
that's
would say, the customers that bought.
That's not from the genetics in it. The difference between the organic produce rotting and the non-organic produce not rotting is because of the things they can put on the non-organic produce, the coatings they can put on it, the sprays they can put on it, what they can, where they can store those things, all of those things that, you know, that's what keeps the stuff from rotting. There are things that they can spray on them. There's chemicals they can spray on them that will keep them from rotting. And, you know, you can go into that argument. If they eat something that might be rotten and make somebody sick, would it have been better to maybe put some of that stuff on there? You can look at it that way.
One thing I think we need to make people understand, too, is the corn that Greg and I are talking about at 160 bushel the acre is the kind of corn that goes into cow feed. And when you buy a can of corn out of the store, that's sweet corn, that's a completely different breed of corn. And that's something you need to understand too.
Now let me ask this: when you modify corn for the feed for the grain for your cattle and for your pigs, and is that modified to help the pigs and help them with their growth, or is that does that help with the cattle and the nutritional part of the cow?
There are corn seeds that have been modified, and I don't know if they've been genetically modified or they're modified through selective breeding. That is, the starches are easier for animals and humans, or mammals, I guess, in general, to digest. There are different varieties like that. When he said that, there is a difference. There's a huge difference between sweet corn and field corn. However, we all eat field corn. Right. And eat a lot of it, but you eat it in you eat it in corn chips. Taco Bell's shells, the bread, the flour, the different things that go into different things, Frito-Lay chips. I mean, all of those. We've all had some stuff. When this originally came out years ago, all of those companies said they would not use any GMO. They're all using the GMO because they couldn't tell.
They can't get around it, can they?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, when we talk about this, I mean, it'd be ideal, but can we get around it? And then I hear people saying, well, what they're going to do is they're going to use this GMO grain and seeding to control food distribution and make it to where the government controls it. And I think that is a huge conspiracy theory that's out there. People are afraid that they're telling farmers that you can't save your own seeds, and you can't
save your own soybeans because Monsanto has the patent on the Roundup Ready gene. You cannot save your own soybean seed. You would not want to save your own corn seed because corn, to get it, you have to. It's a huge process to make corn seed. Soybeans, you can just combine your soybean seeds, and you could replant them after drying them and treating them and cleaning them. You can do that, but you're not allowed to do that because you have to sign a waiver that says you will not plant these because you are using this technology that Monsanto came up with, and that's the Roundup Ready gene.
It's illegal to use the seeds that you planted in your own farm.
But if you don't want Roundup Ready seed, go right ahead.
Buy
other seeds.
But explain Roundup Ready. What's so great about Roundup Ready that they can patent the seed to where I can't replant the seed because they want me to go buy some more seed?
The last I heard, about 98% of the soybeans planted in the United States are Roundup Ready. Roundup is the common name for a chemical called glyphosate, and glyphosate it when you spray it on a plant, that plant loses the ability to produce its own sugars. It can't produce the photosynthetic process anymore, so it dies slowly and it goes away. We can now, they put a gene in the soybeans that it could get around Roundup, okay? And before, there was a huge problem with weeds in soybeans. And there was also what's called a yield drag. You'd spray something on your soybeans, didn't kill them, but it killed your weeds and it hurt your soybeans. And your yield drag, and if you wouldn't have sprayed them and had a clean field, you might have made 60 bushel. Well, now you're only making 40 bushel. That's the yield drag, okay? So now we spray Roundup on them. There's no yield drag. And we can go. But when you got the Roundup Ready, those were genetically modified. That is a GMO. They inserted the Roundup gene into there. Monsanto did that, and that's why we have to sign a thing that says we won't replant this.
Well, it sounds like the age of the small farmer is over.
Absolutely.
It's been over for 20 years.
Yeah.
And may I ask the guest, is there any truth to the fact that Roundup is akin to Agent Orange that they use in Vietnam for defoliation?
I shouldn't say this, but you can drink Roundup. I wouldn't suggest it. I'm not saying go out and drink Roundup, but you can, and it's not going to hurt you. That is one of the reasons why the Roundup Ready thing was so huge and is so huge. There's Roundup Ready corn, there's Roundup Ready cotton, there's Roundup Ready sweet corn they're coming out with. There's Roundup Ready soybeans. That's where it started. There's Roundup Ready. I think they have tobacco now.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, but the reason that was so big was because Roundup is non-toxic to mammals. I mean, it's not a problem for us, and we can, but it is to plants. And the only thing you have to worry about is nature finds a way. And if you just spray Roundup on your fields every year, nature's going to find a way
to get around it.
Right.
And pretty soon you'll have resistant weeds. So what you need to do as a responsible farmer, and what they ask you to do and what they sort of police you and make you do, you have to spray other things with that Roundup.
Mm-hmm. And that's the same Roundup you buy down at Home Depot to spray your sidewalks with.
Yes.
Yeah, Bianchi.
Yeah, I wonder if your guest could explain the Monsanto Protection Act that was signed by this lackadaisical president we have.
Listen, let me take my break first, and let me come back to that, because I've got a break in about 3 minutes, and I'll give him some time. What a topic. So when I've got about 3 minutes, and I don't want a heavy question. Anybody got a question out there that's not real deep that can take an, and take a won't take a long,
hey,
long? Yeah, go ahead, Alex.
I do. I actually have two questions, but I'll save the second one until after your break. But can you explain what seems like an obvious question to me, exactly how seedless grapes and watermelons are reproduced? Because if they grow and they don't have a seed, like a normal plant, then how do you grow some more? You know, how do you have a crop for the next year? So can you briefly explain how how are they producing these meal seeds that, you know, won't reproduce itself? I mean, how exactly are they getting them? Is it grown in a test tube? Are they using, kind of a plant to, like kind of a harvester plant or whatever, or a surrogate plant? Or how exactly does that work?
They're doing what you said last. It's sort of like a surrogate plant. To get seedless products, they use some. It's a triploid process. Usually in nature, we do what's called a diploid process, which means you have two. You have a mother, you have a male, you have a female, and then you get those, and then that's the way things carried on. When we do the seedless process, we have what's called a triploid process, and it's sort of they use a surrogate, and they cross those up. And to be honest, I didn't really brush up on that. And just recently, but they use that triploid and they use a surrogate plant and they come back, and I'm sure somebody out there listening could explain it to you way better than I could, but they use that triploid process and it then will not, there's no seeds in that offspring.
It's a form of selective breeding, right, Greg?
Yes.
And I've got about 2 more minutes. When you said it, you don't want to keep your corn seed, why is it such a hard process? I mean, doesn't corn just come? Don't we just use the kernel?
Well,
I don't. You know, hold on, I don't know.
No, years ago we used to have what's called oakum plant. You can treat that corn and you can plant it, but the problem is years ago we used to have what's called open pollinated corn. And if you look at an ear of corn, there are always an even number of rows on that ear, and that's because it was a diploid. You had a male and you had a female, and there's always an even amount. And no matter how many times you count them, there's going to be an even amount on around that kernel. I don't even know where you could find any open pollinated stuff, but if you ever took down an ear of corn and it didn't have rows and they were just sort of splashed everywhere and here and there, that would be open pollinated. You could save that seed, and it would be just the same as what you were buying to plant. But because we use what's called single crosses and we're using the best genetics and we're using hybrids and stuff, you will not, those seeds are all not the same.
You know I'm going to go get me an ear of corn and count. You know that, don't you?
You're going to have 12 to 18 rows on it.
You know I'm going to get an ear of corn.
That's
I'm going to count
and
that.
If you find one with an odd number, you call me because I want to see it.
Hey, listen, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. You guys want the phone lines on or off? Hello? In the chat room. You want to turn the commercials on or off?
Leave them on. No, leave them. Turn the commercials off. Leave them on. We don't want to. We can all talk this way amongst ourselves. Hey, South Carolina.
Hey, man, what's up?
Oh, a lot of good stuff.
Okay.
Hey, I solved my problem. That conduit problem?
Uh-huh.
You know the normal double-layer wall vinyl slinky 12-inch ductwork
you
use on the heat systems? Okay.
Yeah.
You know the half-inch square rabbit wire?
Four-foot
roll?
Mm-hmm.
Cut it 40 inches long. It's enough to wrap all the way around. And basically, I'm making a wire cage to put in. Now the critters can't rip it apart up under the buildings.
Cool. That's a lot cheaper.
Oh, it's a heck of a lot cheaper. It comes out to be like 50 cents a foot plus the cost of the duct tape or the pull ties. And the other way would have been $10 a foot.
Well, I tell you what, I don't trust none of these people, man.
Yeah. You're talking about my rabbit wire? Or
they talking this crazy stuff.
I know.
You know, when I'm in Egypt, you can drive down the road, and every plot, you know, a plot may be 50 foot wide, 100 foot wide, and so many feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
Every one you come, just like we're driving down a normal street here in America, you're looking at the houses. Mm-hmm. Every one you drive by, that family is farming that plot.
Yep.
And feeding the family and also feeding the city.
Yep.
And that's eventually what Americans need to get back. Hell, it's not going to be any jobs any place else. They even got robots that's picking crops, that's harvesting lettuce and that.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who used to be a research editor for Mother Earth magazine. And in his history, in California, on a two-acre parcel of land, 2 acres, growing using organic techniques, he set a commune of 400 people for 2 years. It can be done.
And you know another thing, Americans eat too damn much.
Yeah.
Heck, you wouldn't need 60 or whatever, 600 bushels an acre or whatever the heck he was boasting on.
Yeah.
If we didn't eat so damn much.
Yeah. There's also, I got to talk to Tracy. One of these days we got to do a show on ethanol. Because we've done a lot of study with my R&D company on ethanol. A lot of what everybody says negative about ethanol, when you trace it all the way back to where did that research come from, it was an oil company paid for the study. And the scientist came up with the conclusion he was paid to get, because it isn't true.
Well, another point, they say that the cost of oil has went up because they're bringing that oil that they're deriving out of this new methodology from the West.
Yeah.
It's coming online now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Oil is crept over $100 a barrel again.
Yeah. Well, that's the Middle East set the price on that. I mean, we're never going to see $30 a barrel oil ever again in human history. We're never going to see it that cheap ever again. No reason to. They make too much money with it at $100, and everybody's gotten used to the shock.
Well, it's not that. I mean, we've printed about $30 trillion in the last in the last 10 to 15 years. So, if you print that much money, that's you're naturally going to get inflation. So,
yeah.
If you look at the cost of oil, like between 1995 and 2010, mm-hmm. actually up till I think the last chart it was up to last year. Mm-hmm. If you looked at it, the cost of oil in units of ounces of gold, you'll find that the price of oil has been relatively flat, and we think that the price of oil is going up, but it's just inflation because
yep.
our government's destroying the U.S. dollar.
Yep.
So,
yep.
you know.
Yep. Good point. But most people don't understand that. All the people look at, well, when I used to do consumer protection work, all the people cared about the contract is what's the monthly payment. They never looked to see that $600 rent-to-own TV was going to cost them $1,800 by the time they paid it off. You know, they only cared about the fact it was only $20 a week. That's all they cared about.
Yep.
And that's the way it is. You know, people just go what the price is at the pump, and they really aren't paying attention to the bigger economic situation. Your home didn't go up in value. The truth is the dollar went down, so it takes more dollars to buy the same house you always had.
Exactly. I mean, I've gotten in so many arguments, especially here in Florida, because the housing market was like really booming down here, you know, here in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in arguments with people because they didn't think their house was going to go down. And it was like when I moved to Orlando in 2005. I'm sorry, 2006. So I was getting I got in arguments with people because they're like, you should buy a house. I'm like, you know, you're gonna hate me for saying this, but you shouldn't have bought the house that you did because you're about to lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because I've always been a student of Austrian economics, and I quickly looked at the situation and saw that this is a bubble that's about to burst. People are about to be hurting very badly.
Uh-huh.
And if you buy one of these houses, then you're going to be in bad shape. And most of the people I know, they're $100,000 underwater right now.
Yeah.
You
know,
so Alex,
genetics. Please explain to us what genetics is. Because some people may not understand, you know, genetics. We look at, I mean, we don't know what that means. Some of us didn't pay attention in that class.
Genetics is the study of what makes you what you are. I mean, down at the molecular level, clear down to DNA and why you have the traits you have and how you got those traits and where they came from and how, you know, how you, not how you can change those traits, but maybe in plants, pass those traits on or not pass those traits on, I guess would be the first way.
And there are genes and genetics in almost everything that's living.
Correct. There is. So that you have a code that makes you what you are and makes plants what they are. And there's the nature versus nurture debate. Are you the way you are, and are things the way they are because of their genes, or is it because of what nature has made them? Or is it because nature has made them that way, or is it because how they've been nurtured, brought up, or how they've been watered and fertilized and things like that if we're talking about plants?
Okay. Pianki, go ahead and re-ask your question for anyone who may have come in at the top of the hour so that we're not just talking and not knowing what we're talking about. Pianki?
You want to put you on hold.
What is up with that?
What can I ask?
No, he just dropped the call. Go ahead, Alex.
Okay. I can't recall your guest name.
His name is Greg.
What's your name, sir? Greg. Hey, Greg. Are you familiar with apparently there's this study that they did with lab rats that they fed them conventional corn, Monsanto corn, and they grew all these cancerous tumors, particularly in their liver. And I know that. Yeah, well, essentially, I want to know: are you aware of that study that happened last year?
No, I'm not aware of that specific study. But one of the first things is who did the study. That's one of the things you always want to look at. I mean, it's just
there was it's supposed to have been two universities. One was out of Britain, and I think it was like another one like in Arkansas or something like that. But it was supposed to be two university studies two universities that did the study. I can't recall the name of the universities right now, but I don't know.
And there's studies, and just like I said, I mean, there was the study on the potatoes, and I opened with that earlier. There was a study where they fed lab rats potatoes, genetically modified potatoes, and that was the big thing. And these they had problems with their intestinal tracts. Many of them died. Their intestinal tracts actually ended up becoming paralyzed. They couldn't absorb nutrients. Well, what they didn't tell you was the way they genetically modified the potatoes to use in this study is they put a toxin in there that is found in a flower, and I can't remember the exact flower in nature, and then they put that into the potatoes, and it was genetically modified. And what the study said was completely true. Genetically modified organisms fed to those lab rats caused them to die. But they didn't tell you that they were genetically modifying with something that would cause any mammal to die. Because
right.
It wasn't a good genetic modification. Not all genetic modifications have to be good. We can use them bad also. We can use genetic modifications to produce toxins. We can use they're using genetic modifications now to produce vaccines. They're doing it to produce vaccines. They're putting things in, and the plants then produce toxins that help produce different medications and vaccines for people.
Go ahead, South Carolina.
I live about 15 miles from a company called Coker Pedigree Seed Company that came around in the late 1800s, and they did modifications on seed like cotton, soybeans, tobacco, not so much corn, but we didn't grow it around here to that extent. And they've helped to grow corn and cotton seed. They've increased the cotton seed yield
tremendously by making that cotton, you know, resistant to certain diseases, particularly, you know, those diseases that are caused by, you know, an abundance of water in certain years. So, I mean, we've got it all around us. It's been here forever. And to the one end, we've received the benefit and been glad of it. But on the other end, we see the benefit and want to demonize the folks for it. So at this point, I just kind of throw my hands up and say, you know, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
What you were sort of talking about, that wasn't really genetic modification. That was selective breeding. And the way that happens is it's very expensive, it's very slow, it's very time-consuming, the selective breeding. It's very good, and it has been helpful. But let's say you have a very wet year, and you have a 100-acre cotton field, and 80% of those plants in that wet year die. Okay, what you then do is you go out there. There was a gene that nature put or somehow got into those cotton seed or those cotton plants that lived, and it was there that they could survive a wet year. And I don't know what the diseases that cotton get are. I know it might be in corn, gray leaf spot, or Phytophthora, or something like that. But you then go harvest those cotton seeds, and then you grow those and proliferate those so that that seed can then be planted. That's selective breeding. Genetic modification, or GMO, would mean you would then go out and take those cotton seed. You would break it down to the molecular level, pull the DNA out of there, figure out which one it was, which gene caused it, and then you would insert it into other ones and then grow an entire field of it right away so that it would happen very quickly. And that's how we do that.
Let me go back to Pianchi's question, since he's not there because he dropped out. But what he asked was, there was legislation in reference to Monsanto that came to the Supreme Court, I want to say, in favor of them allowing to patent, was it patent genes? Or
yes,
what was
patent traits.
Patent traits. And I'm not quite sure if it was upheld.
It was.
What are your thoughts on that?
They put forth the research. And my thoughts on it are this. I used to be able to grow 40 bushel soybeans. Because Monsanto has gone out and done all the research, put in millions and billions of dollars, let it be so I can grow Roundup Ready soybeans, I can now in a good year grow 75 bushel soybeans. It's made me a lot of money. I don't have a problem with them doing that. That's sort of free market, free enterprise, letting them do that. I'm sure you can have huge conspiracy theories and different things like that. But what incentive would a company have to make new traits if right away a farmer if then they lost that the money? If they're not making money, they're not going to do these things. That's all there is to it.
And so it's almost like which one comes first.
Correct.
And what people don't remember and don't understand is you can still go buy 40 bushel acres bean seed from somebody else.
Yeah, it's still out there. Nobody uses it.
But you put... Now, John, you had a question.
Oh, yeah. You know, we all, my mama named me John, and I don't know what the royal baby's name is. I wonder if they chose John or not. But my mom, we all saw the movie, the documentary, Food Inc., mm-hmm. and they talked about the cattle being given corn and corn not being good, and you mentioned a lot of that you have genetically modified corn that's being fed to cattle. Is that having any effect on the cattle, in your opinion?
No. Nutritionally, there is no difference. There is no difference between a genetically modified corn and non-genetically modified corn. There are, through selective breeding, though, there are some corns that are a little bit better. I mean, they have got corns that have starches that are easier for mammals to digest. There are corns that are better to make Frito-Lay chips with and Doritos and different things. I don't know if I'm on say that on the radio.
You can say that.
Plug for them. But anyhow, no, there's not. But that Food Inc., did Michael Moore make that?
I think so.
Imagine that.
The Michael Moore type movie.
Can I chime in on that, Tracy?
Go ahead, Alex.
Well, you know, that,
as long as you roll the window up down there in Florida, because it's warmer there than it is here.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, my Okay. Yeah, I get that the corn may taste the same and you can make it so it's more digestible, blah, blah, blah. But when we're talking about feeding it to cows, I mean, it seems like we can't see the forest for the trees. Cows don't eat corn. They eat grass. And so that's, I mean, we shouldn't be feeding cows corn. So I think, you know, that's the problem.
And that was the point they made in the movie.
Well, we've been feeding cows corn for 150 years.
And as a matter of fact, from my understanding, they tell me cows will eat anything.
Well,
but they're not supposed to.
Originally, your caller's right. I mean, cows were put here to eat grass. They were a grazing animal. They were put here to eat grass. Corn is something that we domesticated ourselves, sort of took it and the American Indian did that, and then we've taken it and run with it. It goes back to the same type of thing with cattle as I talk about with corn. 50 years ago, a cow, a finished cow or steer, would weigh about 800 to 900 pounds, and it would take it about 20 months to get there. We can now get them to 1,400 pounds in 13 to 14 months, and you have a better quality and a better tasting product. If you want to do that, you can still find grass fed beef, and if that's what you want, I mean, you can go
you
buy it.
You gotta pay for it.
Correct.
Ooh, you pay big.
Right. And if we quit feeding cattle corn,
hold on, Sal.
If we quit feeding cattle corn, all beef would be that high.
Well, wait a minute. But grass isn't
how much cheaper?
Hold on, Sal.
They don't grow as fast, and it all comes down, and there's not as much of it in the feedlots and things like that.
For example, to pasture cattle in Northeast Ohio, it's something around one cow to the acre, correct?
Correct.
So if you were going to pasture feed, so if you were going to have 100 head of cattle to take to market, you would have to have 100 acres of grass. And what's it take in a feedlot?
The square footage. You're talking square footage per animal, and then you're feeding them corn and 1 acre of corn is going to give you 200 bushel, and if you do the math, and that's in a good year. I mean, I shouldn't say 200, but 200 bushel, and if you start doing the math, the amount of pounds that are there and how fast they'll grow on it. And are they as healthy? Is that 14-month-old steer healthy? Probably not. One of the things we do is kidney fat and back fat, but he's living to 14 months. Okay, we're not worried about him living. And you feed cows that are going to live to 14 years different than you feed cows that are going to live to 14 months.
Right. Dairy cattle are fed an entirely different diet than beef cattle.
Hold on, South Carolina. I got to cross this. So beef cattle get fed differently than corn cattle.
Dairy cattle.
Dairy cattle get fed different than meat
beef.
Cattle.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that which I eat and that which I drink is two different cattle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, South Carolina. I just got to get it, you know. I don't know. I thought all cows are like horses. They all ride the same.
Different.
No, that was scandal about 20 years ago that one of the steak chains was serving
hold
cow,
on, Mike.
Not deer beef. Okay.
Mike, hold on.
Yeah.
Go ahead, South Carolina, because South Carolina's going to have a coronary on me. Go ahead, South.
No, my question is this. I mean, we're talking about genetically modified foods. You know, my concern is not so much the genetically modified foods; it's the chemicals that they give these cows to ward off disease and so on and so forth that may be doing more harm than good, like the antibiotics and the other things that they're giving them that may be causing us issue, and maybe that is what we need to be looking at instead of, you know, the food that we're feeding them. Because that goes directly into the bone, into the bloodstream, and maybe into the tissue, and stays there.
A lot of the antibiotics that they use, and they do, they prophylactically treat at a lot of the feedlots, and they'll treat them ahead of time so those animals don't get sick. And that is a big debate right now of whether or not we need to do that, and whether or not we should do that. The antibiotics that they are using, though, to treat ahead of time and prophylactically treat, as I said, are out of those animal systems within 72 hours, and they can't find them. I mean, they look for them, they test for them, and they test for them down to the parts per million, and they can't find them. They test, you know, there's certain places like the kidney where they should show up, and that's one of the places they'll test it. They'll kill plants. The back of the eyeball, for some reason, it'll stay there in those gels, and it doesn't show up. So if it's not showing up, and they can't test it down to the parts per million, you know, the question is it there anymore?
I've had the same discussion with people about milk because my background is dairy. Mm-hmm. And you did not ship, we call it medicine milk.
Correct.
You know, 72 hours, mm-hmm. and you didn't ship that milk. And yet you still have people that think they're buying milk in a store that has antibiotics in it.
No.
Hey, Tracy, can I go back to something just briefly?
Hold on just a second. Not so blind, Mike, you want to jump in there before I go back to Alex?
Yeah, I was just going to say real quickly that just to help you out because you're on that topic, steer beef and cattle cow is two different animals. That's why one of the big steak chains that had discount family steaks to be served, and I forget what the chain was. It was one of those steak chains from 25 years ago that were big. They were serving cow meat, and the way you tell is steer beef is a white marbling in the fat. Cow is mm-hmm. yellow. Is, now, remember, this is a blind guy telling you the colors here, so forgive me if I got it backwards.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's yellow,
right,
yellow marbled
right.
beef. You're eating cow.
That's one of the things we do when we grade carcasses. I mean, that's one of the first grade they make that they do is they do color. And an
yep.
animal less than 30 months of age will have a different color to it than an animal older than 30 months of age.
Mm-hmm.
And the meat will and the color and the marbling will.
And
it's better tasting if it's younger.
And different breeds, because the yellowing and the fat comes from iron, the way the animal metabolizes the iron in their diet. And certain
yeah.
breeds metabolize iron different. Your Jerseys and your Guernseys are what we call yellow fat cattle.
Yeah.
Most dairy cattle are yellow
yeah.
fat cattle.
Yeah.
And you don't want to eat yellow fat cattle?
No,
it don't matter.
Dairy cattles are okay. They're just not near as efficient.
Right.
We have bred dairy cows to milk.
Right.
We have bred beef cows to grow beef. And if you try to feed a dairy cow for beef, it's not as efficient. You're going to have to feed it more feed than you would a beef calf.
Okay.
So make sure your steak has white marbling in it.
Right.
Yeah, that's not. No, yellow marbling's okay. It's just not as efficient. I mean, it'll still taste good.
You take a 12-month-old Jersey steer, and he'll taste just as good as a 12-month-old Hereford steer.
But he won't be near as big, and he would have had
right.
to eat more to get to that weight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But will he be tender?
He could be if he has internal muscle fat.
The question is, will he be tender? Hold on. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I did a little bit of research on this a while ago, and when it comes to, like, the meat that we eat, the red meat, and I know that most cows actually grazed up until the late 60s, until they started to industrialize the meat. So it wasn't till that point, till the farms became more industrialized, did we start feeding cows corn more. Yeah, we may have been feeding cows corn for a long time, but I'm saying until where most of our meat came from, it was grazed up until the late 60s. I just want to put that out there. But one of the things for us to be aware of is that the meat is definitely different. One of the nutrients that is conjugated linoleic acid, which will be in the meat if they ate grass like they're supposed to. But since we're feeding them corn, the meat that we consume doesn't have that nutrient in it. And what we found is that just having that nutrient allows the human body, when it ingests it, to purge extra body fat, you know. And so this is one of those contributing reasons why Americans are overweight. You know, what will you know, why is it that I should say there may be, we don't know what else is missing from our meat because of things like this. You know, what other nutrients are missing from our meat, you know, or from our food just in general, from these industrial farming practices. You know, I think that's one thing that we need to really look at. You know, it's not, the cows are getting bigger, but the meat doesn't have the same nutritional value as it did if they grazed naturally with the grass.
It did. When we took them from a grazing animal and put them into feedlots, it changed the composition of the meat. It did, and it also made it cheaper for us, and it also made it a little bit more tender because they didn't have to walk so many miles. But back to what you said about, you know, America wants all the reasons for why we're overweight. I'll tell you why I'm overweight. I eat too much. I mean, it's pretty simple. But we did change it a little bit. But it's still pretty good. I mean,
Greg, don't most
don't most beef operators pasture up until that animal hits a feedlot?
Yes. Cow-calf, we have not industrialized beef because we can't yet the way they have done chickens and pork. Chickens, you know, it used to, if you look back at the farm from 100 years ago, on every farm, and I teach this in my class, there's a hog house, there's a chicken house,
mm-hmm.
there's they had a small dairy farm where they milked about 30 cows, and they were self-sufficient, and then they could also sell some to the local towns. Now, and another thing I've done in the school district I work in, every other year we count the amount of dairy cows in our school district. The amount of dairy cows has stayed almost completely the same in the 12 years I've been there, but we have now cut in half the number of dairy farms,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of is the way. And I mean, that's a trend. Farms keep getting bigger. The cow calf producer, those calves usually will graze out on pastures with the mother from the time they are born for 7 months, and then the next 7 or 8 months they'll be in a feedlot and then they're harvested after that.
I mean, I use the example in our area of the Damascus Livestock Auction. When I was a kid, it was nothing to see that auction sell until 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. Now it's over by 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Correct.
And it's not because there's any fewer animals around. It's because there's fewer small farmers.
They're contracted, and they have
right.
a place to go, and everything's contracted ahead of time.
Right.
Yes.
Wow.
Now, is my fruit and vegetables any better to go to the farmer's market? Because Walmart has just taken on the farmers markets directly through mass advertising.
I think it's always better if you can buy local on anything. That's sort of my opinion on it. I mean, you are buying something that is grown in your backyard. If you trust the person you're getting from and it's a local, yeah, I would say it's better. You don't know where. I used to sell a lot of sweet corn, and it put me through college. I used to grow up to 20 acres a year, and I did it in the summer when I was in college, and it helped me put me through college, and I would then go out and pick it in the mornings and sell it. And I would sell it to different stores in the area. And I also sold a lot right there at the house. Stores did not care how much you sprayed on it, pesticides. All they cared about was what it looked like, and there was no worms in it. And they didn't care if it tasted good so much either. They just wanted it because the American consumer, for the most part, buys with their eyes. Mm-hmm. If it looks good, they're going to buy it. And they didn't care about those other things. So you had to make sure you didn't have worms in it. You had to spray your pesticides on it and stuff like that all the time. I quit growing so much and just grew there for the home and stuff, and every now and then you get a worm in it. But that didn't bother people because they knew. If you get no worms in corn, there's a reason. Okay? There's a reason why you don't. There are no worms in that sweet corn usually a lot of time. You know, there should be one every now and then, unless you're growing the BT corns, which will then keep the worms out now.
Did he say BT corn?
Yeah.
What is a BT corn?
That's what we talked about earlier. That is
so
one.
Okay.
It's a genetically modified.
So it
has a longer name.
Bacillus. I can't.
That's at the end of the show. Hey, listen, I'm going to take a break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229, and we will be right back.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren, the home for afternoons.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Hey.
My line is dead.
You say what?
Oh, I just said my line went dead for some reason. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't hearing it.
Yeah, I want to know if this this guy, if he actually, if he supports full, like, better labeling of our food to know exactly what's in it.
That's a good question. Because I know that the thing that Alabama was talking about cuts both ways with saying stuff is natural. There's other stuff that is artificially flavored. And what that means is it's not necessarily flavored with anything bad. It's just that, like, when you get chocolate-flavored stuff, if a soybean doesn't grow in chocolate, it is artificially flavored, but it doesn't mean what they use is necessarily bad. They might use carob or, you know, one of the accepted natural artificial flavorings, you know? And so it's just... Oh, yeah. It's a mess. But... And with drugs today and pharmaceutical companies, I don't know about them at all. They haven't cured anything with polio. Everything is manage a system now. Because they can hook you on a medication for the rest of your life and they'll make billions of it.
Yeah. You know, I don't really have it. Issue with genetic modified organisms and food and things like that, because I think it's necessary, especially if mankind is going to continue to evolve. This is something we're going to need, especially as we move out into space and whatever. So we're going to have to master that, but we have to do it ethically, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but my biggest issue is government intervention, you know, because anytime the government gets involved, and, you know, I'm a libertarian, so this is my philosophy, but they distort the market and they cause they create a moral hazard, you know, because they remove the natural consequences that would occur if they had not, you know, intervened. You know, so, you know, one of the reasons why we have, say, like high fructose corn syrup and everything, it's derived from the Monsanto's corn crop. But the reason what made that profitable is that Reagan instituted a sugar quota. So because the sugar farmers here domestically lobbied to him and said, well, we don't want that, you know, we don't want foreign corn to be shipped in. So, you know, it came to compromise and said, well, we're going to limit how much sugar can be imported into the country. Well, only thing that happened is that made sugar farmers rich, and it drove the prices of sugar up. We have the highest, we pay the most for sugar of just about anybody in the world.
Right.
So now companies that produce food and beverage, you know, that's why there's no real sugar in most beverages, because it was just too expensive and it was cheaper to go to corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup.
Well, not only
and that's
that.
Why that's why that's in everything.
But not only that corn syrup is federally subsidized to keep the price stable, and they give it to manufacturers for free. Well, hey, you've got two choices of sweeteners, one that's artificially high in price and one that's absolutely free. Which one are you going to use?
Exactly.
No-brainer. We're very involved. My research and development company is very involved in small-scale ethanol production. Bring it down to a real local, basic level, okay? I can buy sugar by the ton outside the United States, by the metric ton, at about $150, $160 a ton. That would make my ethanol 65 cents a gallon for material producing.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'm staying out of the whole corn controversy and everything else, you know? But I can't bring it into the country. Because I'm not a confectioner.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, I've been in engineering doing consulting for the last few for like 5 years. What kind of R&D do you do? My area is mostly I do product engineering, design different products and. I've done, you know, industrial
oil and natural gas and equipment and a lot of consumer, some consumer electronics designs, things like that. But I was just curious, what there, are you like in are you in biofuels or what is that?
We are dealing with alternative fuels. We're dealing with geothermal. We are working with carbon fiber technology, nanotubes and rings for energy storage and everything else. And we're doing a lot of things, but basically what we're doing is my R&D company, it's my Menlo Park. I walk in with an idea and I say, here's what we're doing today. You know what I mean? And that's kind of like how I run it. It's my toy because it gives me the legal lawful right off.
WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. You know, it's amazing. People come in my studio and say, that's Doug. You know, they go, oh, that's Heather. Oh, that's Marianne. They're down the hall.
I'm sorry.
Do you know Doug? Or do you know Marianne?
No.
Have you met Heather? I'm like, yeah, they're my next-door neighbor. But they come in my studio and look for Doug. See, I told you, Reverend Coates, I'm trying to be like K105.
I tell you, that's a good country station.
Oh, man, if I can be like Doug and Marianne, I have
more,
it going
you
on.
You got to just put a little more twang.
I got to put a little more twang in.
You going to go country? Tracy, you going to go country?
Oh, I can play the music. I can get that.
I'll ride it now.
Oh, absolutely. Get me. All I need is cowboy hat.
Friend rumors.
Get me a cowboy hat and a pair of cowboy boots and a shirt and a plaid shirt.
You'll be all right.
And yeah. I'll be all right.
You know what happens when you play a country song backwards, don't you?
No.
You get your dog back, you get your girl back,
you know
get
what?
Your truck back.
That's right.
You know what?
Well, my exes live in Texas.
Okay. I'm going to stop. I am with Mr. Greg Sharp, and he is a agricultural vocational education teacher in one of our local school districts. And he took time out of his schedule, and he told me he only has, you know, was it 100 acres or 400 acres?
Farm about 400
acres. He only farms 400 acres and only has 100 cattle.
Only.
And it was, and the operative word here was only. I have an herb garden, but it died. Does that count for anything?
It wasn't genetically modified. That's
and
maybe
he
it had
is
to be racially modified, Tracy.
See there, jeez, oh man.
Because you know the black folks were the successful planters and growers 150 years ago. It wasn't the white folks.
And you can't get no black folk back on the farm right now. See, that's what happened.
Inner city is far more attractive, I guess.
No, it's not. Hold on, guys. I got to finish this because Mr. Greg is going to have to leave, and I got to get him to say goodbye, and he's got a timeline. I want to make sure he's out on time. I want to thank him for taking time out first. He teaches, and I appreciate that because I think he teaches because he wants to.
Yeah.
Depends which day of the week it is. Right.
Anybody that teaches our children who could have another occupation does it out of love because things ain't way they used to be no more. They're just totally different. And it's not the kids, it's the politics of the district. I'll say it out loud, you don't have to. It's the politics of the district and of the school board and they've taken the pasture and the passion out of the classroom and put it everywhere else than it's not supposed to be, and then we see what we have in the classroom. You don't have to say it. You didn't say it to me. I just know it. And so I have to applaud those people who show up every day and still teach.
Still teach.
Because it's because of the teachers that we had in our past who made us who we are in our future, a lot of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe in the Bible. I believe in God. But God gave us teachers to get information so that we could read the Bible. And if you can't read, it's kind of hard to get the word out.
And I'm sure Mr. Sharp is somebody's favorite teacher, many people.
He's mine. You're right there next to Bio Bob.
Where'd you go to school?
Hubbard.
Okay.
Hubbard and his Biology Williams. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple of them, Biology Williams and Ramuno, and they were fabulous teachers. One was touch biology. And I didn't catch on like I should have because I was scatterbrained, but it's kind of good. So thank you.
Anything you want that I didn't ask you that you want to say that was I a good student?
Did great. Yeah.
This was your first time, huh?
Yeah.
On radio.
Yeah.
Well, welcome. You're always welcome to come back. You can come back on school break sticks.
All right.
We got school break. You guys take more breaks than those. You got, you know, in service, all that kind of crazy stuff.
If you can get me out of an in service, that'd be great.
And he can come back because the show's not genetically modified.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Very much.
It's genetically modified. You know, that's what makes us so rich.
Yeah.
We're organic.
Yeah. Does that mean we're paying extra crap?
Yes. Pretty much. Since you want to put it that way.
That's what goes on organic,
dude. See?
Yep.
And it makes everything better, doesn't it?
What do you want your? What would you want your sweet corn fertilized with? As your choices.
Depends on what country you live in.
That's true.
There's different types of fertilizer.
I'll be honest. I don't eat raw vegetables because I saw a documentary one time showed them irrigating vegetables in Mexico with human sewage. So I refuse to eat raw vegetables unless I know exactly where they came from.
Let me ask one. I've got 2 minutes, and I'm going to let you just walk, put your headset there and say goodbye. When it comes to washing food and our produce now, do I have to go out and buy a special product called Fit to do it?
If you buy locally grown produce, there's a very low chance that they spray. And we talked about this earlier with the organic and stuff and things rotting. They will spray over top the last thing they'll do before they pick the produce, and it may have pesticides on it. It could have, if it came from a foreign country, it could have waste on it, which isn't good. But those things can happen. Now, the pesticide should be at a low enough level that we got past it, but still it was handled. It was in different places. It touched a million different things. Who knows what happens? They will then spray a coating on there to keep the produce looking fresh.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't come from locally, that can happen. And that coating is basically a wax, a natural wax type, and water will not just take that off.
So correct. We do, it's not a bad idea to have a...
If you go to your local farm market and buy it, water's
you're right.
Fine. You're fine. If in the middle of the winter you're buying, you know, a nice ripe tomato that came from South America or Central America or
you
something
would
like
do
that,
something like that.
It might not be a bad idea, correct?
Might have a little dew on it.
Yeah. We'll call it dew.
Call it dew.
Dew.
Oh, that's good to know. Because, you know, when we grew up, we would go out and pick up a tomato at the garden. And as long as you had a pair of blue jeans on and it wasn't a white dress, you'd rub it off and eat it. Just like that. It was called food.
Right.
And now you're not, they say you really shouldn't do this. You really should, you know, clean your foods and all that kind of stuff.
You should. You should wash your foods. You can't say that you shouldn't. But if and
I ain't gonna die.
No. And,
okay.
And the American farmer does. I mean, they do a fantastic job of trying to produce a safe, edible product for consumers. And they're not going to go out there and spray something they shouldn't. And not any good farmer will. And he won't go out and spray something and then pick it. If it says you can't pick it for a week, go out and spray it and pick it the next day.
Okay.
And those chemicals have what's called half-life, and they dissipate. They just dissipate as they go, and they'll go away. And if it tells you not to pick it for 7 days, by the end of 7 days, it should be gone. But it's still a good idea to wash it.
Okay.
I mean, you know, that's why I still say that's why farm kids don't get sick as much. You let them go play in the dirt when they're little and
right.
Pick up all
I think
that
so.
Stuff.
Farm kids don't get E. coli.
Crap.
They do
that's
not get
well,
E. coli.
They have, we have, you know, resistance to it because we've actually been...
We've been eating it.
Yep.
So we've been eating it all along.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, Greg, so much. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure having him here. Wow, thanks, Dick.
Educational.
Yes, very much so.
Sure.
Very, very informative. You don't have to leave. You can stay.
No, I got to go.
Oh,
I
okay.
do have to go. So.
He's got kids to attend to.
Correct. I actually have to get down to the Columbiana County Fair. We're setting up. The fair will be next week, and we're setting up down there for the Columbiana County Fair. And
I saw my first
what sale day. What's sale day, Greg?
The steer sale would be Thursday night at 6 o'clock, and the hog, lamb, and
dairy beef feeders.
Dairy beef feeders sell Thursday night after the
that's right.
the steers, and the cheese sells after the dairy beef feeder, and then on Saturday, I believe, beginning at 2 o'clock, we have chickens, hogs, and lambs.
selling.
And go down, yeah, go down to the fair, and most of those kids, that money goes right in a college account.
Correct.
Okay.
A lot of kids name their projects tuition and things like that, and it goes into the college fund, and that is a product that has been taken care of and has been done right. It hasn't come out of a big feedlot. Some of the people that are listening, it comes out of a small farm, and they've taken care of it.
If there's somebody from the Columbiana Fair that wants to come on and talk about next week's fair, please have them call us. I'm putting you guys on that. They can call us. And come. They don't have to come in. They can do it by phone and just call us and tell us what's going on at the Columbiana County Fair.
Sure.
They let me come down there.
And what did you do?
I saw my first tractor pull.
That's exciting.
Come on down there, and I'll show you around. I actually take animals to the fair. I'll have some animals down there. And then my kids, I have three kids that will have three hogs, three steers. We have carcass hogs.
So your animals won't come back from the fair?
No.
Don't tell my kids that yet.
Okay.
Sunday's a rough day because that's the last day of the fair every year because they've spent so much time with their animals taking care of them. But, yeah, they do not. I'd take some what's called open class home. We have a small place where we'll have our open class that we show. Those do come back home with us.
Okay.
The market projects do not come back home.
Dairy cows all go home.
The dairy cows do. The dairy beef
do
gets
not.
Sold. Correct.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
South Carolina, Alex, not so blind, Mike. Your mics are still on. Brother John.
Sister Tracy.
What did you think about the show today?
Thing I know for sure is that if all of the genetically modified food places blow up, get destroyed, tornadoes take them down, we'll all starve to death.
I know that. That was important.
I know that for certain.
What else did you learn?
Well, I learned what else? This is my test. This is my test.
South Carolina, what did you learn? Alex?
Pete, I'm just glad I grew up in the South. Where about E. coli?
That's true.
You got E. coli any place you got animals. If you've got livestock and you got poop on the ground, you got E. coli.
Well, I'll tell my kids stop washing their hands now.
I have read in many, many journals, what we have done is we have over-sanitized our children to where their immune system can't fight off. And parents feel like they're trying to keep their kids so clean that when they grow up, their immune system just doesn't develop all of the antibodies that it needs to.
Well, so
we bathe too much,
and we use too many soaps because our skins are so dry because of the amount of bathing that the American public does.
That's why they make lotion.
That's right.
It's not uncommon to see a six-month-old baby in a playpen or a bassinet in a barn. Not uncommon at all.
It's not uncommon, and actually when they start walking. They start walking everywhere.
I used to milk cows barefoot.
But I'm saying is if you look at people, we keep sanitizer in here for colds and stuff on that. But parents, especially urban and inner city, urban and suburban.
We're becoming germaphobes.
Yeah.
That's why there's two things of sanitizer within my reach.
Yeah. and as a matter of fact, I think Jeff and Sticks and Ben are addicted to it. Jeff can't pass it.
I don't use it.
Not
at all.
I use it before I eat.
And I wonder how much of that stuff we're eating.
Uh-huh. Sanitizer?
Yes, we use so much of it. Yeah.
I don't know.
How many people clean the dirt out from underneath their fingernails with their teeth? Those are the healthy ones. Those are the healthy ones.
Hey, listen, I got an announcement to make. I think, John, you ought to make the announcement.
And what's that?
The baby.
Tracy's pregnant. No, the baby. I'll take that one. I said that.
Do you understand that? It's really funny. I would be miserable.
Would you really?
I'm too old for that. That would be bad. Oh, chasing a kid around at my age would drive me out of my mind. I'd be the worst. I'd be like
kitty
moms.
Not if you had Kate's money.
Even if I had Kate's money.
If you had Kate's money, you just hire a nanny.
No, she's not having a nanny. She's having a housekeeper.
I said they may encourage
her. What's the difference between a nanny and a housekeeper?
One cleans house.
One chases
the kid. What'd you say, South Carolina?
You get a surrogate to have the baby before you get enough money.
No, you missed the point.
If
you're going to have a baby, you ought to want to take care of it and let that child. A child is a game changer. It changes your life.
Of course.
If it's not willing to, if you're not willing to change your life because you have a child, then you should not have one. I like my life the way it is.
I like kids.
Oh, by the way,
they have
the
names
for the baby. You know that. Right?
Okay, give the name. The name is George.
George. Alex Lewis.
Alexander.
Alexander
Lewis.
And I won the bet because I said it would be George. Alexander, yeah. Yeah.
George Alexander Lewis.
Named after his,
yeah.
His
named
great-grandfather.
His fighter.
Mm-hmm.
His
grandmother.
And a conqueror. He was named
Alexander
after George Foreman. Yeah, Joe Lewis.
George.
Alexander
and
Lewis.
Joe Lewis.
And Alexander Manji.
All right,
okay. Oh, yeah,
what else? There was something else I wanted. There was an announcement.
You were talking about
Tomorrow, I think I'm here alone tomorrow. I don't think anybody's. I don't know who's coming in tomorrow. I may have some people.
Tomorrow's going to be Wiener Day.
I think credit union people. People coming in to face credit unions coming in tomorrow. So I probably going to get to.
Do you depend on your computer?
Talk as much about Wiener as I'd like to, but I promise you, between now and the end of the week, we will have a Winky Wiener festival.
Well, what we do know is Uma stood next to her Wiener.
Yes, she did.
Yes, she did.
Who?
Uma.
Uma's wife.
His wife.
Yeah.
She stood next to the Wiener.
But did you see? I just saw the video here a little bit ago. While she was reading her statement, he was looking over her shoulder, making sure she was doing it right.
You know, I just wanted to see if his lips were moving while hers were. You know, I want to see how well she was coached.
Yeah.
So you missed the line, babe.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Listen to you guys. Umar Wiener.
I was so inspired by today's show. In honor of today's show, I just got a bowl of brown cow ice cream. Honest to God.
Uma Thurman. Her name is really Uma?
Yeah.
Yes.
She was Hillary Clinton's Secretary of Staff.
Chief of Staff. One of her close advisors.
Right.
To the Hillary.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Hillary stood next to her man.
I after everything that guy's done, I still can't believe he's in the lead for the getting the mail order.
Talent pools out.
You got to understand, look at what's going on. We haven't talked about Detroit yet.
Yeah.
We're going to get to it probably as soon as I got to get a free day. But we got to talk about, you know, Detroit, New York is going to come develop next.
Barack Obama said these words. He said that Mitt Romney will not save Detroit.
Neither did he.
Yes, he did. That's what he said. And now Detroit goes bankrupt.
Well, You know what?
But no, it's a Republican's fault. I read that on Facebook. Somebody put had some kind of an article.
Probably a more than one.
Actually, you don't understand. It's Bush's fault.
Everything is Bush's fault.
There's been
to
Democrats in charge of
not the point.
Detroit for 50 years, but Bush did it.
No. Actually, let me explain how this is going to work in Detroit. They're going to blame it on George Bush, a Republican governor, and a black mayor.
But the corruption in Coleman Young's administration for a long time.
Bobby Kilpatrick,
that won't mean anything.
You know, though, this should be a wake-up call for every worker in the United States that's depending on their pension. Every middle-aged worker in the United States is looking at a 30-year pension. This thing with a government entity that looks like they're not going to pay out like they're supposed to.
This should be
the wake-up call that makes every middle-aged and younger worker.
I don't think we've seen the reaction yet. All we've seen is some police workers, some retired folks holding up signs. But what happens when that check doesn't arrive?
No, sweetie. It's going to arrive. You have to understand, they're going to partner this, and it's going to go right under everyone else's pension guarantee fund.
Wow.
The same as
gonna
the
get a
steel
check.
Mill.
They're
going to get a check. They're just not going to get the check that they were supposed to get. And they're not going to get benefits.
The last I heard is going to be 10 cents on the dollar. So
no,
if you're getting a $1,000 check, you're going to start getting a check for $100.
Well,
that's not true.
Well, it may mean the same thing.
It's going to be just like the steel mill.
If they can't,
which is what happened to the steel mills. I can tell you because my dad was under PBGC.
But was it 10 cents on the dollar?
Yep.
Of the pension?
Yep. Depended on how much money was in that pension fund when that company went belly up.
Okay.
And it very well may be the same reaction, because if you can't pay your bills, can't sustain your lifestyle, people are going
to
be angry.
Well, you have to understand what they're going to do. It's more about the benefit. Remember.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about
if you take away my health care benefits and then you cut my $2,000 check to $200, I'm screwed.
It won't be $200.
Yes, it is. My dad.
Your
dad. My dad was supposed to get, when he retired, he was supposed to get $2,000 a month. He's getting $200. PVGC, Union Metal Manufacturing Corporation, bankrupt 1984.
Because most of the people that I know are getting more than $200 that retired from them.
It depended on how strong the pension fund when the company went up belly up. It depended what percentage of funding was in the pension fund.
If there's no money in the pension fund, what do they get?
Whatever the government's going to dole out to them is their share.
Yeah, that depends. Ooh. If the pension fund was vested in at the time of when it closed. Certain types of financial instruments do have insurance policies with them. Others don't. And others,
yeah, a lot of them do now.
Government. But besides the decreased benefit, was it Legs that was saying that? That was saying it's probably because of decreased benefit. In the Northeast, a lot of factories closed. Yeah, a lot of the factories up there closed up in the Northeast when I was younger. I also saw lump sum distribution, where people who worked for 40 years in a factory got a $3,200 check and a, you know, pat on the back, have a nice life 6 weeks before they were going to retire.
Well, listen, guys, we're at the end of the day. We made it through another day.
Amen.
Without killing each other, and no argument. I think we got mad because I wouldn't let them talk on top of each other, but they'll be all right.
Well, there's plenty of love in this room.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, I believe tomorrow is the fourth Thursday?
Yes.
And so tomorrow, I believe the credit union will be here tomorrow. I think the nursing home will be here tomorrow. And I'm going to try to bring up Wiener and or Detroit. And we'll if not tomorrow, Friday or Monday. I think maybe if Stick is done with his Porsche.
The Porsche is done.
Okay. As long as you're done with the Porsche, we will be able to have a conversation with Sticks on Monday.
Yeah, I'll be here.
His Porsche.
God willing, the crick don't.
No, I didn't ever figure it out. Was it a Porsche or a porch?
It's a porch.
It's a porch.
It's a porch. It's attached to the front of the house.
But they played with me on Monday, and I said, Sticks is out goofing off finishing up this Porsche. And they said, is that porch or is it Porsche? And I said, it was Porsche then. And so we even got into a car conversation over porch and Porsche.
Mm-hmm. Did you color or stamp your concrete?
Oh, it's all wood. All wood.
I told you, he's one step
all
up
natural.
One step up from the Amish. Hey, we'll see you guys on tomorrow. God bless you and have a good day.
A moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free design.
You've been listening to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends. Listen to Tracy every weekday from noon to 3 on Newstalk 600. Visit our website for more about Tracy and Friends at www.tracyandfriends.com. That's T-R-A-C-E-Y and friends.com. Tune in tomorrow at noon for the next edition of Afternoons with Tracy and Friends.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren. The home for Afternoons with Tracy and Friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Detroit is a step closer to Chapter 9. ABC Stephen Portnoy with what happened on the city's first day in court.
Late last week, a county court judge tried to halt the bankruptcy filing, saying Michigan's Constitution bars officials from taking any steps that might reduce pension benefits. But the federal judge handling the city's case says his courtroom is the exclusive venue for any action regarding the Detroit bankruptcy. And he's now put a stop to any new challenges.
The Motor City is the largest municipality in the U.S. to file for bankruptcy. The LAPD charging a 16-year-old who tweeted and used Facebook to say that he wanted to start a riot in Hollywood. The July 18th disturbance.